He could have been any man walking down the streets of Manhattan. He could have been anyone's father. He didn't look toward Clary, didn't acknowledge her presence at all. His eyes were on Luke as he walked up the narrow aisle between the benches. How could he come in here like this without any weapons? Clary wondered, and had her question answered a moment later. Inquisitor Aldertree made a noise like a wounded bear, tore himself away from Malachi, who was trying to hold him back, staggered down the dais steps and hurled himself at Valentine. He passed through Valentine's body like a knife tearing through paper. Valentine turned to watch Aldertree with an expression of bland interest as the Inquisitor staggered, collided with a pillar, and sprawled awkwardly to the ground. The consul, following, bent to help him to his feet. There was a look of barely concealed disgust on his face as he did it, and Clary wondered if the disgust was directed at Valentine or at Aldertree for acting such a fool. Another faint murmur carried around the room. The Inquisitor squeaked and struggled like a rat in a trap, Malachi holding him firmly by the arms as Valentine proceeded into the room without another glance at either of them. The shadow hunters, who had been clustered around the benches, drew back, like the waves of the Red Sea parting for Moses, leaving a clear path down the center of the room. Clary shivered as he drew closer to where she stood with Luke and Simon. "He's only a projection," she told herself. "Not really here. He can't hurt you." Beside her, Simon shuddered. Clary took his hand just as Valentine paused at the steps of the dais and turned to look directly at her. His eyes raked her once, casually, as if taking her measure, passed over Simon entirely, and came to rest on Luke.
"Lucian," he said.
Luke returned his gaze, steady and level, saying nothing. It was the first time they had been together in the same room since Renwick's, Clary thought. And then Luke had been half-dead from fighting and covered in blood. It was easier now to mark both the differences and the similarities between the two men. Luke in his ragged flannel and jeans, and Valentine in his beautiful and expensive-looking suit. Luke, with a day's worth of stubble and gray in his hair, and Valentine looking much as he had when he was 25, only colder somehow, and harder, as if the passing years were in the process of turning him slowly to stone.
"I hear the Clave has brought you onto the council now," Valentine said. "It would only be fitting for a Clave diluted by corruption and pandering to find itself infiltrated by half-breed degenerates."
His voice was placid, even cheerful, so much so that it was hard to feel the poison in his words, or to really believe that he meant them. His gaze moved back to Clary.
"Clarissa," he said. "Here with the vampire, I see. When things have settled a bit, we really must discuss your choice of pets."
A low growling came from Simon's throat. Clary gripped his hand hard, hard enough that there would have been a time he'd have jerked away in pain. Now he didn't seem to feel it.
"Don't," she whispered. "Just don't."
Valentine had already turned his attention away from them. He climbed the dais steps and turned to gaze down at the crowd.
"So many familiar faces," he observed. "Patrick, Malachi, Amatis."
Amatis stood rigid, her eyes bright with hatred. The Inquisitor was still struggling in Malachi's grasp. Valentine's gaze flicked over him, half amused.
"Even you, Aldertree. I hear you are indirectly responsible for the death of my old friend Hodge Starkweather. A pity that."
Luke found his voice.
"You admit it, then," he said. "You brought the wards down. You sent the demons."
"I sent them," said Valentine. "I can send more.
Surely the Clave, even the Clave, stupid as they are, must have expected this. You expected it, didn't you, Lucian?"
Luke's eyes were gravely blue.
"I did. But I know you, Valentine. So have you come to bargain or to gloat?"
"Neither."
Valentine regarded the silent crowd.
"I have no need to bargain," he said.
And though his tone was calm, his voice carried as if amplified.
"And no desire to gloat. I don't enjoy causing the deaths of shadow hunters. There are precious few of us already, in a world that needs us desperately. But that's how the Clave likes it, isn't it?"
It's just another one of their nonsensical rules. The rules they use to grind ordinary shadow hunters into the dust. I did what I did because I had to. I did what I did because it was the only way to make the Clave listen. Shadow hunters didn't die because of me. They died because the Clave ignored me. He met Aldertree's eyes across the crowd. The Inquisitor's face was white and twitching. "So many of you here were in my circle," said Valentine slowly. "I speak to you now, and to those who knew of the circle but stood outside it. Do you remember what I predicted 15 years ago? That unless we acted against the Accords, the city of Alicante, our own precious capital, would be overrun by slobbering, slavering crowds of half-breeds. The degenerate races trampling underfoot everything we hold dear. And just as I predicted, all that has come to pass. The guard burned to the ground, the portal destroyed, our streets awash with monsters. Half-human scum presuming to lead us. So, my friends, my enemies, my brothers under the angel, I ask you, do you believe me now?" His voice rose to a shout. "Do you believe me now?" His gaze swept the room as if he expected an answer. There was none, only a sea of staring faces.
"Valentine."
Luke's voice, though soft, broke the silence.
"Can't you see what you've done? The Accords you dreaded so much didn't make downworlders equal to Nephilim. They didn't assure half-humans a spot on the Council. All the old hatreds were still in place. You should have trusted to those, but you didn't. You couldn't. And now you've given us the one thing that could possibly have united us all." His eyes sought Valentine's. "A common enemy."
A flush passed over Valentine's pale face.
"I am not an enemy. Not of Nephilim. You are that. You're the one trying to entice them into a hopeless fight. You think those demons you saw are all I have? They were a fraction of what I can summon."
"There are more of us as well," said Luke. "More Nephilim, and more downworlders."
"Downworlders," Valentine sneered. "They will run at the first sign of true danger. Nephilim are born to be warriors, to protect this world, but the world hates your kind. There is a reason clean silver burns you and daylight scorches the night children."
"It doesn't scorch me," Simon said in a hard, clear voice, despite the grip of Clary's hand. "Here I am, standing in sunlight."
But Valentine just laughed.
"I've seen you choke on the name of God, vampire," he said.
"And as for why you can stand in the sunlight," he broke off and grinned,
"you're an anomaly, perhaps, a freak, but still a monster."
A monster. Clary thought of Valentine on the ship, of what he had said there. "Your mother told me that I had turned her first child into a monster. She left me before I could have had the chance to do the same to her second." Jace. The thought of his name was a sharp pain. After what Valentine did, he stands here talking about monsters.
"The only monster here," she said, despite herself and despite her resolution to keep silent, "is you. I saw Ithuriel," she went on when he turned to look at her in surprise. "I know everything."
"I doubt that," Valentine said. "If you did, you'd keep your mouth shut, for your brother's sake, if not your own."
"Don't you even talk about Jace to me," Clary wanted to shout. But another voice came to cut hers off, a cool, unexpected female voice, fearless and bitter.
"And what about my brother?"
Amatis moved to stand at the foot of the dais, looking up at Valentine. Luke started in surprise and shook his head at her, but she ignored him.
Valentine frowned. "What about Lucian?"
Amatis's question, Clary sensed, had unsettled him. Or maybe it was just that Amatis was there, asking, confronting him. He had written her off years ago as weak, unlikely to challenge him. Valentine never liked it when people surprised him.
"You told me he wasn't my brother anymore," said Amatis. "You took Stephen away from me. You destroyed my family. You say you aren't an enemy of Nephilim, but you set each of us against each other, family after family, wrecking lives without compunction. You say you hate the Clave, but you're the one who made them what they are now, petty and paranoid. We used to trust one another, we Nephilim. You changed that. I will never forgive you for that. Her voice shook. Or for making me treat Lucian as if he were no longer my brother. I won't forgive you for that either. Nor will I forgive myself for listening to you.
Amatis.
Luke took a step forward, but his sister put up a hand to stop him. Her eyes were shining with tears, but her back was straight, her voice firm and unwavering.
There was a time we were all willing to listen to you, Valentine, she said.
And we all have that on our conscience, but no more, no more. That time is over. Is there anyone here who disagrees with me?
Clary jerked her head up and looked out at the gathered shadow hunters. They looked to her like a rough sketch of a crowd, with white blurs for faces. She saw Patrick Penhallow, his jaw set, and the Inquisitor who was shaking like a frail tree in a high wind, and Malachi, whose dark, polished face was strangely unreadable.
No one said a word. If Clary had expected Valentine to be angry at this lack of response from the Nephilim he had hoped to lead, she was disappointed. Other than a twitch in the muscle of his jaw, he was expressionless, as if he had expected this response, as if he had planned for it.
Very well, he said. If you will not listen to reason, you will have to listen to force. I have already showed you I can take down the wards around your city. I see that you've put them back up, but that's of no consequence. I can easily do it again. You will either accede to my requirements or face every demon the mortal sword can summon. I will tell them not to spare a single one of you, not a man, woman, or child. It's your choice.
A murmur swept around the room. Luke was staring.
You would deliberately destroy your own kind, Valentine?
Sometimes diseased plants must be culled to preserve the whole garden, said Valentine. And if all are diseased... He turned to face the horrified crowd.
It is your choice, he went on.
I have the mortal cup. If I must, I will start over with a new world of shadow hunters, created and taught by me. But I can give you this one chance. If the Clave will sign over all the powers of the Council to me and accept my unequivocal sovereignty and rule, I will stay my hand. All shadow hunters will swear an oath of obedience and accept a permanent loyalty rune that binds them to me. These are my terms.
There was silence. Amatis had her hand over her mouth. The rest of the room swung before Clary's eyes in a whirling blur. They can't give in to him, she thought. They can't. But what choice did they have? What choice did any of them ever have? They are trapped by Valentine, she thought dully. As surely as Jace and I are trapped by what he made us. We are all chained to him by our own blood. It was only a moment, though it felt like an hour to Clary, before a thin voice cut through the silence, the high, spidery voice of the Inquisitor.
Sovereignty and rule? He shrieked. Your rule?
Aldertree. The Consul moved to restrain him, but the Inquisitor was too quick. He wriggled free and darted toward the dais. He was yelping something, the same words over and over as if he'd lost his mind entirely. His eyes rolled back practically to the whites. He thrust Amatis aside, staggering up the steps of the dais to face Valentine.
I am the Inquisitor, do you understand? The Inquisitor, he shouted. I am part of the Clave, the Council. I make the rules, not you. I rule, not you. I won't let you do this, you upstart, demon-loving slime.
With a look very close to boredom, Valentine reached out a hand, almost as if he meant to touch the Inquisitor on the shoulder. But Valentine couldn't touch anything. He was just a projection. And then Clary gasped as Valentine's hand passed through the Inquisitor's skin, bones and flesh vanishing into his ribcage. There was a second, only a second, during which the whole hall seemed to gape at Valentine's left arm, buried somehow, impossibly, wrist-deep in Aldertree's chest. Then Valentine jerked his wrist hard and suddenly to the left, a twisting motion, as if he were turning a stubbornly rusty doorknob. The Inquisitor gave a single cry and dropped like a stone. Valentine drew his hand back. It was slicked with blood, a scarlet glove reaching halfway to his elbow, staining the expensive wool of his suit. Lowering his bloody hand, he gazed out across the horrified crowd, his eyes coming to rest at last on Luke. He spoke slowly. "I will give you until tomorrow at midnight to consider my terms. At that time I will bring my army, in all its force, to Broslyn Plain. If I have not yet received a message of surrender from the Clave, I will march with my army here to Alicante, and this time we will leave nothing living. You have that long to consider my terms. Use the time wisely." And with that, he vanished. Chapter 14. In the Dark Forest.
"Well, how about that?" said Jace, still without looking at Clary.
He hadn't really looked at her since she and Simon had arrived on the front step of the house the Lightwoods were now inhabiting. Instead, he was leaning against one of the high windows in the living room, staring out toward the rapidly darkening sky.
"A guy attends the funeral of his 9-year-old brother and misses all the fun."
"Jace," Alec said in a tired sort of voice, "don't." Alec was slumped in one of the worn, overstuffed chairs that were the only things to sit on in the room. The house had the odd, alien feel of houses belonging to strangers. It was decorated in floral-printed fabrics, frilly and pastel, and everything in it was slightly worn or tattered. There was a glass bowl filled with chocolates on the small end table near Alec. Clary, starving, had eaten a few and found them crumbly and dry. She wondered what kind of people had lived here.
The kind who ran away when things got tough, she thought sourly.
They deserved to have their house taken over.
"Don't what?" Jace asked. It was dark enough outside now that Clary could see his face reflected in the window glass.
His eyes looked black. He was wearing Shadow Hunter mourning clothes. They didn't wear black to funerals, since black was the color of gear in fighting. The color of death was white, and the white jacket Jace wore had scarlet runes woven into the material around the collar and wrists. Unlike battle runes, which were all about aggression and protection, these spoke a gentler language of healing and grief. There were bands of hammered metal around his wrists, too, with similar runes on them. Alec was dressed the same way, all in white with the same red-gold runes traced over the material. It made his hair look very black. Jace, Clary thought, on the other hand, all in white, looked like an angel, albeit one of the avenging kind.
"You're not mad at Clary, or Simon," Alec said. "At least," he added with a faint, worried frown, "I don't think you're mad at Simon."
Clary half expected Jace to snap an angry retort, but all he said was,
"Clary knows I'm not angry at her."
Simon, leaning his elbows on the back of the sofa, rolled his eyes and said,
"What I don't get is how Valentine managed to kill the Inquisitor. I thought projections couldn't actually affect anything."
"They shouldn't be able to," said Alec. "They're just illusions. So much colored air, so to speak." "Well, not in this case. He reached into the Inquisitor and he twisted," Clary shuddered. "There was a lot of blood."
"Like a special bonus for you," Jay said to Simon.
Simon ignored this.
"Has there ever been an Inquisitor who didn't die a horrible death?" he wondered aloud. "It's like being the drummer in Spinal Tap."
Alec rubbed a hand across his face.
"I can't believe my parents don't know about this yet," he said. "I can't say I'm looking forward to telling them."
"Where are your parents?" asked Clary. "I thought they were upstairs." Alec shook his head. "They're still at the necropolis, at Max's grave. They sent us back. They wanted to be there alone for a while."
"What about Isabel?" Simon asked. "Where is she?"
The humor, such as it was, left Jace's expression.
"She won't come out of her room," he said. "She thinks what happened to Max was her fault. She wouldn't even come to the funeral."
"Have you tried talking to her?"
"No," Jace said. "We've been punching her repeatedly in the face instead."
"Why, do you think that won't work?"
"Just thought I'd ask." Simon's tone was mild.
"We'll tell her the stuff about Sebastian not actually being Sebastian," said Alec. "It might make her feel better. She thinks she ought to have been able to tell that there was something off about Sebastian. But if he was a spy..." Alec shrugged.
"Nobody noticed anything off about him. Not even the Penhallows.
I thought he was a knob, Jace pointed out.
Yes, but that's just because... Alex sank deeper into his chair. He looked exhausted, his skin a pale gray color against the stark white of his clothes. It hardly matters. Once she finds out what Valentine's threatening, nothing's going to cheer her up.
But would he really do it? Clary asked. Send a demon army against Nephilim? I mean, he's still a shadow hunter, isn't he? He couldn't destroy all his own people.
He didn't care enough about his children not to destroy them, Jay said, meeting her eyes across the room, their gazes held. What makes you think he'd care about his people?
Alec looked from one of them to the other, and Clary could tell from his expression that Jace hadn't told him about Ethereal yet. He looked baffled and very sad.
Jace. This does explain one thing, Jace said without looking at Alec. Magnus was trying to see if he could use a tracking rune on any of the things Sebastian had left in his room, to see if we could locate him that way. He said he wasn't getting much of a reading on anything we gave him, just flat.
What does that mean?
They were Sebastian Verloc's things.
The fake Sebastian probably took them whenever he intercepted him, and Magnus isn't getting anything from them because the real Sebastian
is probably dead, finished Alec. And the Sebastian we know is too smart to leave anything behind that could be used to track him. I mean, you can't track somebody from just anything. It has to be an object that's in some way very connected to that person. A family heirloom, or a stele, or a brush with some hair in it, something like that.
Which is too bad, said Jace. Because if we could follow him, he'd probably lead us straight to Valentine. I'm sure he scuttled right back to his master with a full report. Probably told him all about Hodge's crackpot mirror lake theory.
It might not have been crackpot, Alex said. They've stationed guards at the pass that go to the lake and set up wards that will warn them if anyone portals there.
Fantastic. I'm sure we all feel very safe now.
Jace leaned back against the wall.
What I don't get, Simon said, is why Sebastian stayed around. After what he did to Izzy and Max, he was going to get caught. There was no more pretending. I mean, even if he thought he'd killed Izzy instead of just knocking her out, how was he going to explain that they were both dead and he was still fine?
No, he was busted. So why hang around through the fighting? Why come up to the guard to get me? I'm pretty sure he didn't actually care one way or the other whether I lived or died.
Now you're being too hard on him, Jay said. I'm sure he'd rather you died.
Actually, Clary said, I think he stayed because of me.
Jace's gaze flicked up to hers with a flash of gold.
Because of you? Hoping for another hot date, was he?
Clary felt herself flush. No, and our date wasn't hot. In fact, it wasn't even a date. Anyway, that's not the point. When he came into the hall, he kept trying to get me to go outside with him so we could talk. He wanted something from me, I just don't know what.
Or maybe he just wanted you, Jace said.
Seeing Clary's expression, he added, Not that way. I mean, maybe he wanted to bring you to Valentine.
Valentine doesn't care about me, Clary said. He's only ever cared about you.
Something flickered in the depths of Jace's eyes.
Is that what you call it?
His expression was frighteningly bleak.
After what happened on the boat, he's interested in you, which means you need to be careful, very careful.
In fact, it wouldn't hurt if you just spent the next few days inside. You can lock yourself in your room like Isabel.
I'm not going to do that.
Of course you're not, said Jace, because you live to torture me, don't you?
Not everything, Jace, is about you, Clary said furiously.
Possibly, Jace said, but you have to admit that the majority of things are.
Clary resisted the urge to scream. Simon cleared his throat.
Speaking of Isabel, which we only sort of were, but I thought I ought to mention this before the arguing really got underway. I think maybe I should go talk to her.
You? Alex said, and then, looking faintly embarrassed by his own discomfiture, added quickly. It's just, she won't even come out of her room for her own family. Why would she come out for you?
Maybe because I'm not family, Simon said.
He was standing with his hands in his pockets, his shoulders back. Earlier, when Clary had been sitting close to him, she had seen that there was still a thin white line circling his neck where Valentine had cut his throat, and scars on his wrists where those had been cut too. His encounters with the Shadow Hunter's world had changed him, and not just the surface of him, or even his blood. The change went deeper than that. He stood straight, with his head up, and took whatever Jason Alec threw at him and didn't seem to care. The Simon who would have been frightened of them, or made uneasy by them, was gone. She felt a sudden pain in her heart, and realized with a jolt what it was. She was missing him. Missing Simon. Simon as he had been.
"I think I'll have a try at getting Isabel to talk to me," said Simon. "It can't hurt."
"But it's almost dark," Clary said. "We told Luke and Amatis we'd be back before the sun went down."
"I'll walk you back," Jace said. "As for Simon, he can manage his own way back in the dark, can't you, Simon?"
"Of course he can," Alec said indignantly, as if eager to make up for his earlier slighting of Simon. "He's a vampire, and," he added,
"I just now realized you were probably joking. Never mind me."
Simon smiled. Clary opened her mouth to protest again and closed it, partly because she was, she knew, being unreasonable, and partly because there was a look on Jace's face as he gazed past her, at Simon, a look that startled her into silence. It was amusement, Clary thought, mixed with gratitude and maybe even, most surprising of all, a little bit of respect. It was a short walk between the Lightwoods' new house and Amatis's. Clary wished it were longer. She couldn't shake the feeling that every moment she spent with Jace was somehow precious and limited, that they were closing in on some half-invisible deadline that would separate them forever. She looked sideways at him. He was staring straight ahead, almost as if she weren't there. The line of his profile was sharp and clear-edged in the witchlight that illuminated the streets. His hair curled against his cheek, not quite hiding the white scar on one temple where a mark had been. She could see a line of metal glittering at his throat, where the Morgenstern ring dangled on its chain. His left hand was bare. His knuckles looked raw. So he really was healing like a mundane, as Alec had asked him to. She shivered. Jace glanced at her.
"Are you cold?"
"I was just thinking," she said. "I'm surprised that Valentine went after the Inquisitor instead of Luke. The Inquisitor's a shadow hunter, and Luke's a downworlder. Plus, Valentine hates him."
"But in a way he respects him, even if he is a downworlder," Jace said.
And Clary thought of the look Jace had given Simon earlier, and then tried not to think of it. She hated thinking of Jace and Valentine as being in any way alike, even in so trivial a thing as a glance.
"Luke is trying to get the Clave to change, to think in a new way. That's exactly what Valentine did. Even if his goals were, well, not the same. Luke's an iconoclast. He wants change. To Valentine, the Inquisitor represents the old, hide-bound Clave he hates so much."
"And they were friends once," Clary said. "Luke and Valentine."
"The marks of that which once hath been," Jay said.
And Clary could tell he was quoting something from the half-mocking tone in his voice.
"Unfortunately, you never really hate anyone as much as someone you cared about once. I imagine Valentine has something special planned for Luke down the road after he takes over."
"But he won't take over," said Clary. And when Jace said nothing, her voice rose. "He won't win. He can't. He doesn't really want war, not against Shadowhunters and Downworlders."
"What makes you think Shadowhunters will fight with Downworlders?" Jace said.
And he still wasn't looking at her. They were walking along the canal street, and he was looking out at the water, his jaw set.
"Just because Luke says so? Luke's an idealist."
"And why is that a bad thing to be?"
"It's not. I'm just not one," said Jace.
And Clary felt a cold pang in her heart at the emptiness in his voice. Despair, anger, hate. These are demon qualities. He's acting the way he thinks he should act. They had reached Amatis's house. Clary stopped at the foot of the steps, turning to face him. "Maybe," she said. "But you're not like him, either." Jace started a little at that. or maybe it was the firmness in her tone. He turned his head to look at her for what felt like the first time since they left the Lightwoods.
"Clary," he began and broke off with an intake of breath.
"There's blood on your sleeve. Are you hurt?" He moved toward her, taking her wrist in his hand. Clary glanced down and saw to her surprise that he was right. There was an irregular scarlet stain on the right sleeve of her coat. What was odd was that it was still bright red. Shouldn't dried blood be a darker color, she found?
"That's not my blood."
He relaxed slightly, his grip on her wrist loosening.
"Is it the Inquisitor's?"
She shook her head. "I actually think it's Sebastian's."
"Sebastian's blood?"
"Yes. When he came into the hall the other night, remember, his face was bleeding. I think Isabel must have clawed him, but anyway, I touched his face and got his blood on me."
She looked more closely at it.
"I thought Amatis washed the coat, but I guess she didn't."
She expected him to let go of her then, but instead he held her wrist for a long moment examining the blood before returning her arm to her, apparently satisfied.
"Thanks."
She stared at him for a moment before shaking her head.
"You're not going to tell me what that was about, are you?"
"Not a chance." She threw her arms up in exasperation.
"I'm going inside. I'll see you later."
She turned and headed up the steps to Amatis's front door. There was no way she could have known that the moment she turned her back, the smile vanished from Jace's face, or that he stood for a long time in the darkness once the door closed behind her, looking after her, and twisting a small piece of thread over and over between his fingers.
"Isabel," Simon said. It had taken him a few tries to find her door, but the scream of "Go away!" that had emanated from behind this one convinced him he'd made the right choice.
"Isabel, let me in."
There was a muffled thump and the door reverberated slightly, as if Isabel had thrown something at it, possibly a shoe.
"I don't want to talk to you and Clary. I don't want to talk to anyone. Leave me alone, Simon."
"Clary's not here," said Simon. "And I'm not going away until you talk to me."
"Alec!" Isabel yelled. "Jace! Make him go away!"
Simon waited. There was no sound from downstairs. Either Alec had left or he was lying low.
"They're not here, Isabel. It's just me."
There was a silence. Finally, Isabel spoke again. This time her voice came from much nearer, as if she were standing just on the other side of the door.
"You're alone?"
"I'm alone," Simon said.
The door cracked open. Isabel was standing there in a black slip, her hair lying long and tangled over her shoulders. Simon had never seen her like this, barefoot, with her hair unbrushed and no makeup on.
"You can come in."
He stepped past her into the room. In the light from the door, he could see that it looked, as his mother would have said, like a tornado had hit it. Clothes were scattered across the floor in piles, a duffel bag opened on the floor as if it had exploded. Isabel's bright, silver-gold whip hung from one bedpost, a lacy white bra from another. Simon averted his eyes. The curtains were drawn, the lamps extinguished. Isabel flopped down on the edge of the bed and looked at him with bitter amusement.
"A blushing vampire? Who'd have guessed?"
She raised her chin.
"So, I let you in. What do you want?"
Despite her angry glare, Simon thought she looked younger than usual, her eyes huge and black in her pinched white face. He could see the white scars that traced her light skin, all over her bare arms, her back and collarbones, even her legs. "If Clary remains a shadow hunter," he thought, "one day she'll look like this, scarred all over." The thought didn't upset him as once it might have done. There was something about the way Isabel wore her scars, as if she was proud of them. She had something in her hands, something she was turning over and over between her fingers. It was a small something that glinted dully in the half-light. He thought for a moment it might be a piece of jewelry.
"What happened to Max?" Simon said. "It wasn't your fault."
She didn't look at him. She was staring down at the object in her hands. "Do you know what this is?" she said, and held it up. It seemed to be a small toy soldier, carved out of wood. A toy shadow hunter, Simon realized.
complete with painted-on black gear. The silver glint he'd noticed was the paint on the little sword it held. It was nearly worn away. "It was Jace's," she said without waiting for him to answer. "It was the only toy he had when he came from Idris. I don't know. Maybe it was part of a bigger set once. I think he made it himself, but he never said much about it. He used to take it everywhere with him when he was little, always in a pocket or whatever. Then one day I noticed Max carrying it around. Jace must have been around 13 then. He just gave it to Max, I guess when he got too old for it. Anyway, it was in Max's hand when they found him. It was like he grabbed it to hold on to when Sebastian, when he..." She broke off. The effort she was making not to cry was visible. Her mouth was set in a grimace, as if it were twisting itself out of shape. "I should have been there protecting him. I should have been there for him to hold on to, not some stupid little wooden toy." She flung it down onto the bed, her eyes shining.
"You were unconscious," Simon protested. "You nearly died, Izzy. There was nothing you could have done."
Isabel shook her head, her tangled hair bouncing on her shoulders. She looked fierce and wild. "What do you know about it?" she demanded. "Did you know that Max came to us the night he died and told us he'd seen someone climbing the demon towers? And I told him he was dreaming and sent him away. And he was right. I bet it was that bastard Sebastian climbing the tower so he could take the wards down. And Sebastian killed him so he couldn't tell anyone what he'd seen. If I'd just listened, just taken 1 second to listen, it wouldn't have happened."
"There's no way you could have known," Simon said. "And about Sebastian, he wasn't really the Penhollow's cousin. He had everyone fooled."
Isabel didn't look surprised. "I know," she said. "I heard you talking to Alec and Jace. I was listening from the top of the stairs."
"You were eavesdropping?"
She shrugged. "Up to the part where you said you were going to come and talk to me. Then I came back here. I didn't feel like seeing you." She looked at him sideways. "I'll give you this much, though. You're persistent."
"Look, Isabel." Simon took a step forward. He was oddly, suddenly conscious of the fact that she wasn't very dressed, so he held back from putting a hand on her shoulder or doing anything else overtly soothing. "When my father died, I knew it wasn't my fault, but I still kept thinking over and over of all the things I should have done, should have said before he died."
"Yeah, well, this is my fault," Isabel said. "And what I should have done is listened. And what I still can do is track down the bastard who did this and kill him."
"I'm not sure that'll help."
"How do you know?" Isabel demanded. "Did you find the person responsible for your father's death and kill him?"
My father had a heart attack," Simon said. "So, no."
"Then you don't know what you're talking about, do you?"
Isabel raised her chin and looked at him squarely.
"Come here."
"What?"
She beckoned imperiously with her index finger. "Come here, Simon." Reluctantly, he came toward her. He was barely a foot away when she seized him by the front of his shirt, yanking him toward her. Their faces were inches apart. He could see how the skin below her eyes shone with the marks of recent tears. "You know what I really need right now?" she said, enunciating each word clearly.
Simon said. "No?"
"To be distracted," she said, and with a half-turn yanked him bodily onto the bed beside her. He landed on his back amid a tangled pile of clothes.
"Isabel," Simon protested weakly, "do you really think this is going to make you feel any better?"
"Trust me," Isabel said, placing a hand on his chest, just over his unbeating heart. "I feel better already." Clary lay awake in bed, staring up at a single patch of moonlight as it made its way across the ceiling. Her nerves were still too jangled from the events of the day for her to sleep, and it didn't help that Simon hadn't come back before dinner, or after it. Eventually, she'd voiced her concern to Luke, who'd thrown on a coat and headed over to the Lightwoods. He'd returned, looking amused.
"Simon's fine, Clary," he said. "Go to bed."
And then he left again, with Amatis, off to another one of their interminable meetings at the Accords Hall. She wondered if anyone had cleaned up the Inquisitor's blood yet. With nothing else to do, she'd gone to bed, but sleep had remained stubbornly out of reach. Clary kept seeing Valentine in her head, reaching into the Inquisitor and ripping his heart out. The way he had turned to her and said,
"You'd keep your mouth shut for your brother's sake, if not your own."
Above all, the secret she had learned from Ithuriel lay like a weight on her chest. Under all these anxieties was the fear, constant as a heartbeat, that her mother would die. Where was Magnus? There was a rustling sound by the curtains, and a sudden wash of moonlight poured into the room. Clary sat bolt upright, scrabbling for the serif blade she kept on her bedside table.
"It's all right."
A hand came down on hers. A slender, scarred, familiar hand.
"It's me."
Clary drew her breath in sharply, and he took his hand back. "Jace," she said, "what are you doing here? What's wrong?" For a moment he didn't answer, and she twisted to look at him, pulling the bedclothes up around her. She felt herself flush, acutely conscious of the fact that she was wearing only pajama bottoms and a flimsy camisole. And then she saw his expression, and her embarrassment faded.
"Jace," she whispered.
He was standing by the head of her bed, still wearing his white morning clothes, and there was nothing light or sarcastic or distant in the way he was looking down at her. He was very pale, and his eyes looked haunted and nearly black with strain. "Are you all right?"
"I don't know," he said in the dazed manner of someone just waking up from a dream. "I wasn't going to come here. I've been wandering around all night. I couldn't sleep. And I kept finding myself walking here, to you."
She sat up straighter, letting the bedclothes fall down around her hips. "Why can't you sleep? Did something happen?" she asked and immediately felt stupid. What hadn't happened? Jace, however, barely seemed to hear the question.
"I had to see you," he said mostly to himself. "I know I shouldn't, but I had to."
"Well, sit down then," she said, pulling her legs back to make a space for him to sit at the edge of the bed. "Because you're freaking me out. Are you sure nothing's happened?"
"I didn't say nothing happened."
He sat down on the bed facing her. He was close enough that she could have just leaned forward and kissed him. Her chest tightened. "Is there bad news? Is everyone...
"It's not bad," said Jace. "And it's not news. It's the opposite of news. It's something I've always known, and you probably know it too. God knows I haven't hidden it all that well."
His eyes searched her face slowly, as if he meant to memorize it.
"What happened," he said, and hesitated, "is that I realized something."
"Jace," she whispered suddenly. And for no reason she could identify, she was frightened of what he was about to say. "Jace, you don't have to..."
"I was trying to go... somewhere," Jace said. "But I kept getting pulled back here. I couldn't stop walking, couldn't stop thinking. About the first time I ever saw you. And how after that I couldn't forget you. I wanted to, but I couldn't stop myself. I forced Hodge to let me be the one who came to find you and bring you back to the Institute. And even back then, in that stupid coffee shop, when I saw you sitting on that couch with Simon, even then that felt wrong to me. I should have been the one sitting with you, the one who made you laugh like that. I couldn't get rid of that feeling, that it should have been me. And the more I knew you, the more I felt it. It had never been like that for me before. I'd always wanted a girl and then gotten to know her and not wanted her anymore. But with you, the feeling just got stronger and stronger until that night when you showed up at Renwick's and I knew. And then to find out that the reason I felt like that, like you were some part of me I'd lost and never even knew I was missing until I saw you again, that the reason was that you were my sister. It felt like some sort of cosmic joke. Like God was spitting on me. I don't even know for what. For thinking that I could actually get to have you? That I would deserve something like that, to be that happy? I couldn't imagine what it was I'd done that I was being punished for.
If you're being punished, Clary said, then so am I. Because all those things you felt, I felt them too. But we can't. We have to stop feeling this way because it's our only chance.
Jace's hands were tight at his sides. Our only chance for what?
to be together at all. Because otherwise we can't ever be around each other, not even just in the same room, and I can't stand that. I'd rather have you in my life even as a brother than not at all.
And I'm supposed to sit by while you date boys, fall in love with someone else, get married?
His voice tightened. And meanwhile, I'll die a little bit more every day watching. No, you won't care by then, she said, wondering even as she said it if she could stand the idea of a Jace who didn't care. She hadn't thought as far ahead as he had, and when she tried to imagine watching him fall in love with someone else, marry someone else, she couldn't even picture it. Couldn't picture anything but an empty black tunnel that stretched out ahead of her forever. Please, if we don't say anything, if we just pretend...
There is no pretending, Jay said with absolute clarity. I love you, and I will love you until I die. And if there's a life after that, I'll love you then.
She caught her breath. He had said it. The words there was no going back from.
She struggled for a reply, but none came. And I know you think I just want to be with you to show myself what a monster I am, he said. And maybe I am a monster, I don't know the answer to that. But what I do know is that even if there's demon blood inside me, there is human blood inside me as well. And I couldn't love you like I do if I wasn't at least a little bit human. Because demons want, but they don't love. And I...
He stood up then, with a sort of violent suddenness, and crossed the room to the window. He looked lost, as lost as he had in the great hall standing over Max's body.
Jace? Clary said, alarmed. And when he didn't answer, she scrambled to her feet and went to him, laying her hand on his arm. He continued staring out the window. The reflections in the glass were nearly transparent. Ghostly outlines of a tall boy and a smaller girl, her hand clamped anxiously on his sleeve. What's wrong?
I shouldn't have told you that, he said, not looking at her. I'm sorry. That was probably a lot to take in. You looked so... shocked.
The tension underlying his voice was a live wire.
I was, she said. I've spent the past few days wondering if you hated me. And then I saw you tonight, and I was pretty sure you did.
Hated you? He echoed, looking bewildered.
He reached out then and touched her face lightly, just the tips of her fingers against her skin.
I told you I couldn't sleep. Tomorrow by midnight we'll be either at war or under Valentine's rule. This could be the last night of our lives. Certainly the last even barely ordinary one. The last night we go to sleep and get up just as we always have. And all I could think of was that I wanted to spend it with you.
Her heart skipped a beat. Jace.
I don't mean it like that, he said. I won't touch you. Not if you don't want me to. I know it's wrong. God, it's all kinds of wrong. But I just want to lie down with you and wake up with you, just once. Just once ever in my life.
There was desperation in his voice.
It's just this one night. In the grand scheme of things, how much can one night matter?
Because think how we'll feel in the morning. Think how much worse it will be pretending that we don't mean anything to each other in front of everyone else after we've spent the night together, even if all we do is sleep. It's like having just a little bit of a drug. It only makes you want more. But that was why he had told her what he had, she realized. Because it wasn't true, not for him. There was nothing that could make it worse, just as there was nothing that could make it better. What he felt was as final as a life sentence, and could she really say it was so different for her? And even if she hoped it might be, even if she hoped she might someday be persuaded by time or reason or gradual attrition not to feel this way anymore, it didn't matter. There was nothing she had ever wanted in her life more than she wanted this night with Jace. Close the curtains, then, before you come to bed, she said. I can't sleep with this much light in the room. The look that washed over his face was pure incredulity. He really hadn't expected her to say yes, Clary realized in surprise, and a moment later he had caught her and hugged her to him, his face buried in her still messy from sleep hair.
Clary. Come to bed, she said softly. It's late. She drew away from him and returned to the bed, crawling up onto it and drawing the covers up to her waist. Somehow, looking at him like this, she could almost imagine that things were different, that it was many years from now and they'd been together so long that they'd done this 100 times, that every night belonged to them and not just this one. She propped her chin on her hands and watched him as he reached to jerk the curtains shut and then unzipped his white jacket and hung it over the back of a chair. He was wearing a pale gray t-shirt underneath, and the marks that twined his bare arms shone darkly as he unbuckled his weapons belt and laid it on the floor. He unlaced his boots and stepped out of them as he came toward the bed, and he stretched out very carefully beside Clary. Lying on his back, he turned his head to look at her. A very little light filtered into the room past the edge of the curtains, just enough for her to see the outline of his face and the bright gleam of his eyes. "Good night, Clary," he said. His hands lay flat on either side of him, his arms at his sides. He seemed barely to be breathing. She wasn't sure she was breathing herself. She slid her own hand across the bedsheet just far enough that their fingers touched, so lightly that she would probably hardly have been aware of it had she been touching anyone but Jace. As it was, the nerve endings in her fingertips prickled softly, as if she were holding them over a low flame. She felt him tense beside her and then relax. He had shut his eyes and his lashes cast fine shadows against the curve of his cheekbones. His mouth curled into a smile as if he sensed her watching him, and she wondered how he would look in the morning, with his hair messed and sleep circles under his eyes. Despite everything, the thought gave her a jolt of happiness. She laced her fingers through his. "Good night," she whispered. And, hands clasped like children in a fairy tale, she fell asleep beside him in the dark. Chapter 15. Things Fall Apart. Luke had spent most of the night watching the moon's progress across the translucent roof of the Hall of Accords like a silver coin rolling across the clear surface of a glass table. When the moon was close to full, as it was right now, he felt a corresponding sharpening in his vision and sense of smell, even when he was in human form. Now, for instance, he could smell the sweat of doubt in the room and the underlying sharp tang of fear. He could sense the restless worry of his pack of wolves out in Brosalind Forest as they paced the darkness beneath the trees and waited for news from him. "Lucian!" Amatis's voice in his ear was low but piercing. "Lucian!" Snapped out of his reverie, Luke fought to focus his exhausted eyes on the scene in front of him. It was a ragged little group, those who had agreed to at least listen to his plan, fewer than he had hoped for. Many he knew from his old life in Idris, the Penhallows, the Lightwoods, the Ravenscars, and just as many he had just met, like the Monteverdes, who ran the Lisbon Institute and spoke in a mixture of Portuguese and English, or Nazreen Chaudhry, the stern-featured head of the Mumbai Institute. Her dark green sari was patterned in elaborate runes of such a bright silver that Luke instinctively flinched when she passed too close.
"Really, Lucian," said Mayris Lightwood.
Her small white face was pinched by exhaustion and grief. Luke hadn't really expected either her or her husband to come, but they had agreed almost as soon as he'd mentioned it to them. He supposed he ought to be grateful they were here at all, even if grief did tend to make Mayris more sharp-tempered than usual.
"You're the one who wanted us all here. The least you can do is pay attention."
"He has been." Amita sat with her legs drawn under her like a young girl, but her expression was firm. "It's not Lucian's fault that we've been going around in circles for the past hour."
"And we'll keep going around and round until we figure out a solution," said Patrick Penhallow, an edge to his voice.
"With all due respect, Patrick," said Nazreen in her clipped accent, "there may be no solution to this problem. The best we can hope for is a plan. A plan that doesn't involve either mass slavery or..."
began Gia, Patrick's wife, and then she broke off, biting her lip. She was a pretty, slender woman who looked very like her daughter, Aline. Luke remembered when Patrick had run off to the Beijing Institute and married her. It had been something of a scandal, as he'd been supposed to marry a girl his parents had already picked out for him in Idris. But Patrick never had liked to do what he was told, a quality for which Luke was now grateful.
"Or allying ourselves with downworlders," said Luke. "I'm afraid there's no way around that."
"That's not the problem, and you know it," said Maris. "It's the whole business about seats on the council. The Clave will never agree to it. You know that. 4 whole seats?
"Not 4," Luke said. "One each for the fair folk, the moon's children, and the children of Lilith."
"The warlocks, the fae, and the lycanthropes," said soft-voiced Signor Monteverde, his eyebrows arched. "And what of the vampires?"
"They haven't promised me anything," Luke admitted. "And I haven't promised them anything either. They may not be eager to join the council. They're none too fond of my kind, and none too fond of meetings and rules. But the door is open to them should they change their minds."
"Malachi and his lot will never agree to it, and we may not have enough council votes without them," muttered Patrick. "Besides, without the vampires, what chance do we have?"
"A very good one," snapped Amatis, who seemed to believe in Luke's plan even more than he did. "There are many downworlders who will fight with us, and they are powerful indeed. The warlocks alone." With a shake of her head, Signora Monteverde turned to her husband.
"This plan is mad. It will never work. Downworlders cannot be trusted."
"It worked during the uprising," said Luke.
The Portuguese woman's lips curled back.
"Only because Valentine was fighting with fools for an army," she said. "Not demons. And how are we to know his old circle members will not go back to him the moment he calls them to his side?"
"Be careful what you say, Signora," rumbled Robert Lightwood.
It was the first time he had spoken in more than an hour. He'd spent most of the evening motionless, immobilized by sorrow. There were lines in his face Luke could have sworn hadn't been there 3 days ago. His torment was plain in his taut shoulders and clenched fists. Luke could hardly blame him. He had never much liked Robert, but there was something about the sight of such a big man made helpless by grief that was painful to witness.
"If you think I would join with Valentine after Max's death, he had my boy murdered."
"Robert,"
Maris murmured. She put her hand on his arm.
"If we do not join with him," said Signor Monteverde, "all our children may die."
"If you think that, then why are you here?" Amatis rose to her feet. "I thought we had agreed."
"So did I." Luke's head ached.
It was always like this with them, he thought. 2 steps forward and a step back. They were as bad as warring downworlders themselves, if only they could see it. Maybe they'd all be better off if they solved their problems with combat, the way the pack did. A flash of movement at the doors of the hall caught his eye. It was momentary, and if it had not been so close to the full moon, he might not have seen it, or recognized the figure who passed quickly before the doors. He wondered for a moment if he was imagining things. Sometimes, when he was very tired, he thought he saw Jocelyn, in the flicker of a shadow, in the play of light on a wall. But this wasn't Jocelyn. Luke rose to his feet.
"I'm taking 5 minutes for some air. I'll be back."
He felt them watching him as he made his way to the front doors. All of them, even Amatis. Signor Monteverde whispered something to his wife in Portuguese. Luke caught lobo, the word for wolf, in the stream of words.
"They probably think I'm going outside to run in circles and bark at the moon."
The air outside was fresh and cold, the sky a slate steel gray. Dawn reddened the sky in the east and gave a pale pink cast to the white marble steps leading down from the hall doors. Jace was waiting for him, halfway down the stairs. The white morning clothes he wore hit Luke like a slap in the face, a reminder of all the death they'd just endured here, and were about to endure again. Luke paused several steps above Jace.
"What are you doing here, Jonathan?"
Jace said nothing, and Luke mentally cursed his forgetfulness. Jace didn't like being called Jonathan, and usually responded to the name with a sharp objection. This time, though, he didn't seem to care. The face he raised to Luke was as grimly set as the faces of any of the adults in the hall. Though Jace was still a year away from being an adult under Clave law, he'd already seen worse things in his short life than most adults could even imagine.
"Were you looking for your parents?"
You mean the Lightwoods?
Jay shook his head. No, I don't want to talk to them. I was looking for you.
Is it about Clary?
Luke descended several steps until he stood just above Jace.
Is she all right?
She's fine. The mention of Clary seemed to make Jace tense all over, which in turn sparked Luke's nerves. But Jace would never say Clary was all right if she weren't.
Then what is it?
Jace looked past him toward the doors of the hall.
How is it going in there? Any progress? Not really, Luke admitted. As much as they don't want to surrender to Valentine, they like the idea of downworlders on the council even less. And without the promise of seats on the council, my people won't fight.
Jace's eyes sparked. The Clave is going to hate that idea.
They don't have to love it. They only have to like it better than they like the idea of suicide.
They'll stall, Jace advised him.
I'd give them a deadline if I were you. The Clave works better with deadlines.
Luke couldn't help but smile.
All the downworlders I can summon will be approaching the North Gate at twilight. If the Clave agrees to fight with them by then, they'll enter the city. If not, they'll turn around. I couldn't leave it any later than that. It barely gives us enough time to get to Brosselin by midnight as it is.
Jace whistled.
That's theatrical. Hoping the sight of all those downworlders will inspire the Clave, or scare them? Probably a little of both. Many of the Clave members are associated with institutes like you. They're a lot more used to the sight of downworlders. It's the native Idrisians I'm worried about. The sight of downworlders at their gates might send them into a panic. On the other hand, it can't hurt for them to be reminded how vulnerable they are.
As if on cue, Jace's gaze flicked up to the ruins of the guard, a black scar on the hillside over the city.
I'm not sure anyone needs more reminders of that.
He glanced back at Luke, his eyes very serious. I want to tell you something, and I want it to be in confidence. Luke couldn't hide his surprise.
Why tell me? Why not the Lightwoods?
Because you're the one who's in charge here, really. You know that. Luke hesitated. Something about Jace's white and tired face drew sympathy out of his own exhaustion. Sympathy and a desire to show this boy, who had been so betrayed and badly used by the adults in his life, that not all adults were like that, that there were some he could rely on.
All right. And, Jace said, because I trust you to know how to explain it to Clary. Explain what to Clary?
Why I had to do it. Jace's eyes were wide in the light of the rising sun. It made him look years younger.
I'm going after Sebastian, Luke. I know how to find him, and I'm going to follow him until he leads me to Valentine.
Luke let his breath out in surprise.
You know how to find him?
Magnus showed me how to use a tracking spell when I was staying with him in Brooklyn.
We were trying to use my father's ring to find him. It didn't work, but... You're not a warlock. You shouldn't be able to do a tracking spell.
These are runes. Like the way the Inquisitor watched me when I went to see Valentine on the ship. All I needed to make it work was something of Sebastian's.
But we went over this with the Penhallows. He left nothing behind. His room was utterly cleared out, probably for exactly this reason.
I found something, said Jace. A thread soaked in his blood. It's not much, but it's enough. I tried it, and it worked.
You can't go herring off after Valentine on your own, Jace. I won't let you.
You can't stop me.
Not really. Unless you want to fight me right here on these steps. You won't win, either. You know that as well as I do.
There was a strange note in Jace's voice, a mixture of certainty and self-hatred.
Look, however determined you may be to play the solitary hero.
I'm not a hero, Jace said. His voice was clear and toneless, as if he were stating the simplest of facts.
Think of what this will do to the Lightwoods, even if nothing happens to you. Think of Clary.
You think I haven't thought of Clary? You think I haven't thought of my family? Why do you think I'm doing this?
Do you think I don't remember what it's like to be 17?
Luke answered.
To think you have the power to save the world? And not just the power, but the responsibility?
Look at me, said Jace.
Look at me and tell me I'm an ordinary 17-year-old.
Luke sighed.
There's nothing ordinary about you.
Now tell me it's impossible. Tell me what I'm suggesting can't be done.
When Luke said nothing, Jace went on.
Look, your plan is fine as far as that goes. Bring in downworlders, fight Valentine all the way to the gates of Alicante. It's better than just lying down and letting him walk over you. But he'll expect it. You won't be catching him by surprise.
I could catch him by surprise.
He may not know Sebastian's being followed. It's a chance, at least. And we have to take whatever chances we can get.
That may be true, said Luke. But this is too much to expect of any one person, even you.
But don't you see? It can only be me, Jay said, desperation creeping into his voice. Even if Valentine senses I'm following him, he might let me get close enough.
Close enough to do what?
To kill him, said Jace. What else?
Luke looked at the boy standing below him on the stairs. He wished in some way he could reach through and see Jocelyn and her son, the way he saw her in Clary. But Jace was only, and always, himself, contained, alone, and separate.
You could do that? Luke said. You could kill your own father?
Yes, Jace said, his voice as distant as an echo.
Now, is this where you tell me I can't kill him because he is, after all, my father, and patricide is an unforgivable crime?
No.
This is where I tell you that you have to be sure you're capable of it, said Luke, and realized to his own surprise that some part of him had already accepted that Jace was going to do exactly what he said he was going to do and that he would let him.
You can't do all this, cut your ties here and hunt Valentine down on your own, just to fail at the final hurdle.
Oh, said Jace. I'm capable of it.
He looked away from Luke, down the steps toward the square that until yesterday morning had been full of bodies.
My father made me what I am, and I hate him for it. I can kill him. He made sure of that.
Luke shook his head.
Whatever your upbringing, Jace, you fought it. He didn't corrupt you.
No, Jace said. He didn't have to. He glanced up at the sky, striped with blue and gray. Birds had begun their morning songs in the trees lining the square.
I'd better go. Is there something you wanted me to tell the Lightwoods?
No. No, don't tell them anything. They'll just blame you if they find out you knew what I was going to do and you let me go.
I left notes, he added. They'll figure it out.
Then why... Did I tell you all this? Because I want you to know. I want you to keep it in mind while you make your battle plans, that I'm out there, looking for Valentine. If I find him, I'll send you a message.
He smiled fleetingly. Think of me as your backup plan.
Luke reached out and clasped the boy's hand.
If your father weren't who he is, he said, he'd be proud of you.
Jace looked surprised for a moment, and then just as quickly he flushed and drew his hand back.
If you knew, he began and bit his lip. Never mind. Good luck to you, Lucian Greymark. Ave atque vale.
Let us hope there will be no real farewell, Luke said. The sun was rising fast now, and as Jace lifted his head, frowning at the sudden intensification of the light, there was something in his face that struck Luke. Something in that mixture of vulnerability and stubborn pride.
You remind me of someone, he said without thinking. Someone I knew years ago.
I know, Jay said with a bitter twist to his mouth. I remind you of Valentine.
No, said Luke in a wondering voice.
But as Jace turned away, the resemblance faded, vanishing the ghosts of memory.
No, I wasn't thinking of Valentine at all.
The moment Clary awoke, she knew Jace was gone, even before she opened her eyes. Her hand, still outstretched across the bed, was empty. No fingers returned the pressure of her own. She sat up slowly, her chest tight. He must have drawn the curtains back before he left, because the windows were open and bright bars of sunlight striped the bed. Clary wondered why the light hadn't woken her. From the position of the sun, it had to be afternoon. Her head felt heavy and thick. Her eyes bleary. Maybe it was just that she hadn't had nightmares last night for the first time in so long, and her body was catching up on sleep. It was only when she stood up that she noticed the folded piece of paper on the stand. She picked it up with a smile hovering around her lips. So Jace had left a note. And when something heavy slid from beneath the paper and rattled to the floor at her feet, she was so surprised that she jumped back, thinking it was alive. It lay at her feet, a coil of bright metal. She knew what it was before she bent and picked it up. The chain and silver ring that Jace had worn around his neck. The family ring. She had rarely seen him without it. A sudden sensation of dread washed over her. She opened the note and scanned the first lines. "Despite everything, I can't bear the thought of this ring being lost forever, any more than I can bear the thought of leaving you forever. And though I have no choice about the one, at least I can choose about the other." The rest of the letter seemed to wash together into a meaningless blur of letters. She had to read it over and over to make any sense of it. When she did finally understand, she stood staring down, watching the paper flutter as her hand shook. She understood now why Jace had told her everything he had, and why he had said one night didn't matter. You could say anything you wanted to someone you thought you were never going to see again. She had no recollection, later, of having decided what to do next, or of having hunted for something to wear. But somehow she was hurrying down the stairs, dressed in shadow hunter gear, the letter in one hand and the chain with the ring clasped hastily around her throat. The living room was empty. The fire in the grate burned down to gray ash, but noise and light emanated from the kitchen, a chatter of voices and the smell of something cooking. Pancakes? Clary thought in surprise. She wouldn't have thought Amatis knew how to make them. And she was right. Stepping into the kitchen, Clary felt her eyes widen. Isabel, her glossy dark hair swept up in a knot at the back of her neck, stood at the stove, an apron around her waist, and a metal spoon in her hand. Simon was sitting on the table behind her, his feet up on a chair, and Amatis, far from telling him to get off the furniture, was leaning against the counter looking highly entertained. Isabel waved her spoon at Clary. "Good morning," she said. "Would you like breakfast? Although I guess it's more like lunchtime." Speechless, Clary looked at Amatis, who shrugged. "They just showed up and wanted to make breakfast," she said. "And I have to admit I'm not that good a cook." Clary thought of Isabel's awful soup back at the Institute and suppressed a shudder. "Where's Luke?" "In Brosseland with his pack," said Amatis. "Is everything all right, Clary? You look a little..." "Wild-eyed," Simon finished for her. "Is everything all right?" For a moment, Clary couldn't think of a reply. "They just showed up," Amatis had said, which meant Simon had spent the entire night at Isabel's. She stared at him. He didn't look any different. "I'm fine," she said. Now was hardly the time to be worrying about Simon's love life. "I need to talk to Isabel." "So talk," Isabel said, poking at a misshapen object in the bottom of the frying pan that was, Clary feared, a pancake. "I'm listening." "Alone," said Clary. Isabel frowned. "Can it wait? I'm almost done." "No," Clary said. And there was something in her tone that made Simon, at least, sit up straight. "It can't." Simon slid off the table.
"Fine. We'll give you two some privacy," he said.
He turned to Amatis.
"Maybe you could show me those baby pictures of Luke you were talking about."
Amatis shot a worried glance at Clary but followed Simon out of the room. "I suppose I could." Isabel shook her head as the door closed behind them. Something glinted at the back of her neck. A bright, delicately thin knife was thrust through the coil of her hair, holding it in place. Despite the tableau of domesticity, she was still a shadow hunter.
"Look," she said,
"if this is about Simon..."
"It's not about Simon. It's about Jace."
She thrust the note at Isabel. "Read this." With a sigh, Isabel turned off the stove, took the note, and sat down to read it. Clary took an apple out of the basket on the table and sat down as Isabel, across from her at the table, scanned the note silently. Clary picked at the apple peel in silence. She couldn't imagine actually eating the apple, or, in fact, eating anything at all, ever again. Isabel looked up from the note, her eyebrows arched. "This seems kind of personal. Are you sure I should be reading it?" Probably not. Clary could barely even remember the words in the letter now. In any other situation, she would never have showed it to Isabel. But her panic about Jace overrode every other concern. Just read to the end. Isabel turned back to the note. When she was done, she set the paper down on the table. I thought he might do something like this. You see what I mean? Clary said, her words stumbling over themselves. But he can't have left that long ago or gotten that far. We have to go after him and... She broke off, her brain finally processing what Isabel had said and catching up with her mouth. What do you mean? You thought he might do something like this? Just what I said. Isabel pushed a dangling lock of hair behind her ears. Ever since Sebastian disappeared, everyone's been talking about how to find him. I tore his room at the Penhallows apart looking for anything we could use to track him, but there was nothing. I might have known that if Jace found anything that would allow him to track Sebastian, he'd be off like a shot. She bit her lip. I just would have hoped that he'd have brought Alec with him. Alec won't be happy. So you think Alec will want to go after him then? Clary asked with renewed hope. Clary? Isabel sounded faintly exasperated. How are we supposed to go after him? How are we supposed to have the slightest idea where he's gone? There must be some way. We can try to track him. Jace is smart, though. He'll have figured out some way to block the tracking, just like Sebastian did. A cold anger stirred in Clary's chest. Do you even want to find him? Do you even care that he's gone off on what's practically a suicide mission? He can't face down Valentine all by himself. Probably not, said Isabel. But I trust that Jace has his reasons for... For what? For wanting to die? Clary! Isabel's eyes blazed up with a sudden light of anger. Do you think the rest of us are safe? We're all waiting to die or be enslaved. Can you really see Jace doing that? Just sitting around waiting for something awful to happen? Can you really see? All I see is that Jace is your brother just like Max was, said Clary. And you cared what happened to him. She regretted it the moment she said it. Isabel's face went white, as if Clary's words had bleached the color out of the other girl's skin. Max, Isabel said with a tightly controlled fury, was a little boy, not a fighter. He was 9 years old. Jace is a shadow hunter, a warrior. If we fight Valentine, do you think Alec won't be in the battle? Do you think we're not all of us at all times prepared to die if we have to, if the cause is great enough? Valentine is Jace's father. Jace probably has the best chance of all of us of getting close to him to do what he has to do. Valentine will kill Jace if he has to, Clary said. He won't spare him. I know. But all that matters is if he goes out in glory? Won't you even miss him? I will miss him every day, Isabel said. For the rest of my life, which, let's face it, if Jace fails, will probably be about a week long. She shook her head. You don't get it, Clary. You don't understand what it's like to live always at war. To grow up with battle and sacrifice. I guess it's not your fault. It's just how you were brought up. Clary held her hands up. I do get it. I know you don't like me, Isabel, because I'm a mundane to you. You think that's why? Isabel broke off, her eyes bright. Not just with anger, Clary saw with surprise, but with tears. God! You don't understand anything, do you? You've known Jace, what, a month? I've known him for 7 years. And all the time I've known him, I've never seen him fall in love, never seen him even like anyone. He'd hook up with girls, sure. Girls always fell in love with him, but he never cared. I think that's why Alec thought... Isabel stopped for a moment, holding herself very still. She's trying not to cry, Clary thought in wonder. Isabel, who seemed like she never cried. It always worried me, and my mom, too. I mean, what kind of teenage boy never even gets a crush on anyone? It was like he was always half awake where other people were concerned. I thought maybe what had happened with his father had done some sort of permanent damage to him. Like maybe he never really could love anyone. If I'd only known what had really happened with his father.
but then I probably would have thought the same thing, wouldn't I? I mean, who wouldn't have been damaged by that? And then we met you, and it was like he woke up. You couldn't see it because you'd never known him any different. But I saw it, Hodge saw it, Alex saw it. Why do you think he hated you so much? It was like that from the second he met you. You thought it was amazing that you could see us, and it was. But what was amazing to me was that Jace could see you, too. He kept talking about you all the way back to the Institute. He made Hodge send him out to get you. And once he brought you back, he didn't want you to leave again. Wherever you were in the room, he watched you. He was even jealous of Simon. I'm not sure he realized it himself, but he was. I could tell. Jealous of a mundane. And then after what happened to Simon at the party, he was willing to go with you to the Dumour, to break Clave Law, just to save a mundane. He did it for you. Because if anything had happened to Simon, you would have been hurt. You were the first person outside our family whose happiness I'd ever seen him take into consideration. Because he loved you. Clary made a noise in the back of her throat. But that was before. Before he found out you were his sister, I know. And I don't blame you for that. You couldn't have known. And I guess you couldn't have helped that you just went right on ahead and dated Simon afterward like you didn't even care. I thought once Jace knew you were his sister, he'd give up and get over it, but he didn't. And he couldn't. I don't know what Valentine did to him when he was a child. I don't know if that's why he is the way he is or if it's just the way he's made. But he won't get over you, Clary. He can't. I started to hate seeing you. I hated for Jace to see you. It's like an injury you get from demon poison. You have to leave it alone and let it heal. Every time you rip the bandages off, you just open the wound up again. Every time he sees you, it's like tearing off the bandages. I know, Clary whispered. How do you think it is for me? I don't know. I can't tell what you're feeling. You're not my sister. I don't hate you, Clary. I even like you. If it were possible, there isn't anyone I'd rather Jace be with. But I hope you can understand when I say that if by some miracle we all get through this, I hope my family moves itself somewhere so far away that we never see you again. Tears stung the backs of Clary's eyes. It was strange. She and Isabel sitting here at this table, crying over Jace for reasons that were both very different and strangely the same. Why are you telling me all this now? Because you're accusing me of not wanting to protect Jace. But I do want to protect him. Why do you think I was so upset when you suddenly showed up at the Penhallows? You act as if you're not a part of all this, of our world. You stand on the sidelines, but you are a part of it. You're central to it. You can't just pretend to be a bit player forever, Clary. Not when you're Valentine's daughter. Not when Jace is doing what he's doing partly because of you. Because of me? Why do you think he's so willing to risk himself? Why do you think he doesn't care if he dies? Isabel's words drove into Clary's ears like sharp needles. I know why, she thought. It's because he thinks he's a demon. Thinks he isn't really human, that's why. But I can't tell you that. Can't tell you the one thing that would make you understand. He's always thought there was something wrong with him, and now because of you, he thinks he's cursed forever. I heard him say so to Alec. Why not risk your life if you'll never be happy no matter what you do?
Isabel, that's enough. The door opened almost silently, and Simon stood in the doorway. Clary had nearly forgotten how much better his hearing was now. It's not Clary's fault.
Color rose in Isabel's face. Stay out of this, Simon. You don't know what's going on.
Simon stepped into the kitchen, shutting the door behind him. I heard most of what you've been saying, he told them matter-of-factly, even through the wall. You said you don't know what Clary's feeling because you haven't known her long enough. Well, I have. If you think Jace is the only one who suffered, you're wrong there.
There was a silence. The fierceness in Isabel's expression was fading slightly. In the distance, Clary thought she heard the sound of someone knocking on the front door. Luke, probably, or Maya bringing more blood for Simon. It's not because of me that he left, Clary said, and her heart began to pound.
Can I tell them Jace's secret now that he's gone? Can I tell them the real reason he left? The real reason he doesn't care if he dies?
Words started to pour out of her almost against her will. When Jace and I went to the Wayland Manor, when we went to find the Book of the White... She broke off as the kitchen door swung open. Amethyst stood there, the strangest expression on her face. For a moment, Clary thought she was frightened, and her heart skipped a beat. But it wasn't fright on Amethyst's face, not really. She looked as she had when Clary and Luke had suddenly showed up at her front door. She looked as if she'd seen a ghost. "Clary," she said slowly, "there's someone here to see you." Before she could finish, that someone pushed past her into the kitchen. Amethyst stood back, and Clary got her first good look at the intruder, a slender woman dressed in black. At first, all Clary saw was the Shadow Hunter gear, and she almost didn't recognize her. Not until her eyes reached the woman's face, and she felt her stomach drop out of her body the way it had when Jace had driven their motorcycle off the edge of the Dumor roof, a 10-story fall. It was her mother. Part 3. The Way to Heaven. Oh yes, I know the way to heaven was easy. We found the little kingdom of our passion that all can share who walk the road of lovers. In wild and secret happiness we stumbled, and gods and demons clamored in our senses. Siegfried Sassoon, The Imperfect Lover. Chapter 16. Articles of Faith. Since the night she'd come home to find her mother gone, Clary had imagined seeing her again, well and healthy, so often that her imaginings had taken on the quality of a photograph that had become faded from being taken out and looked at too many times. Those images rose up before her now, even as she stared in disbelief. Images in which her mother, looking healthy and happy, hugged Clary and told her how much she'd missed her, but that everything was going to be all right now. The mother in her imaginings bore very little resemblance to the woman who stood in front of her now. She'd remembered Jocelyn as gentle and artistic, a little bohemian with her paint-splattered overalls, her red hair and pigtails, or fastened up with a pencil into a messy bun. This Jocelyn was as bright and sharp as a knife, her hair drawn back sternly, not a wisp out of place. The harsh black of her gear made her face look pale and hard. Nor was her expression the one Clary had imagined. Instead of delight, there was something very like horror in the way she looked at Clary, her green eyes wide.
"Clary," she breathed. "Your clothes."
Clary looked down at herself. She had on Amethyst's black Shadow Hunter gear, exactly what her mother had spent her whole life making sure her daughter would never have to wear. Clary swallowed hard and stood up, clutching the edge of the table with her hands. She could see how white her knuckles were, but her hands felt disconnected from her body somehow, as if they belonged to someone else. Jocelyn stepped toward her, reaching her arms out. "Clary!" And Clary found herself backing up so hastily that she hit the counter with the small of her back. Pain flared through her, but she hardly noticed. She was staring at her mother. So was Simon, his mouth slightly open. Amethyst, too, looked stricken. Isabel stood up, putting herself between Clary and her mother. Her hand slid beneath her apron, and Clary had a feeling that when she drew it out, she'd be holding her slender electrum whip.
"What's going on here?" Isabel demanded. "Who are you?"
Her strong voice wavered slightly as she seemed to catch the expression on Jocelyn's face. Jocelyn was staring at her, her hand over her heart.
"Mayris?"
Jocelyn's voice was barely a whisper. Isabel looked startled.
"How do you know my mother's name?"
Color came into Jocelyn's face in a rush.
"Of course. You're Mayris's daughter. It's just... you look so much like her."
She lowered her hand slowly. "I'm Jocelyn Fairchild. I'm Clary's mother." Isabel took her hand out from under the apron and glanced at Clary, her eyes full of confusion.
"But you were in the hospital in New York."
"I was," Jocelyn said in a firmer voice. "But thanks to my daughter, I'm fine now, and I'd like a moment with her."
"I'm not sure," said Amethyst, "that she wants a moment with you."
She reached out to put her hand on Jocelyn's shoulder. This must be a shock for her.
Jocelyn shook off Amatis and moved toward Clary, reaching her hands out. Clary. At last, Clary found her voice. It was a cold, icy voice, so angry it surprised her. How did you get here, Jocelyn? Her mother stopped dead, a look of uncertainty passing over her face. I portaled just outside the city with Magnus Bane. Yesterday he came to me in the hospital. He brought the antidote. He told me everything you did for me. All I've wanted since I woke up was to see you. Her voice trailed off. Clary, is something wrong? Why didn't you ever tell me I had a brother? Clary said. It wasn't what she'd expected to say. Wasn't even what she'd planned to have come out of her mouth. But there it was. Jocelyn dropped her hands. I thought he was dead. I thought it would only hurt you to know. Let me tell you something, Mom, Clary said. Knowing is better than not knowing, every time. I'm sorry, Jocelyn began. Sorry? Clary's voice rose. It was as if something inside her had torn open and everything was pouring out. All her bitterness, all her pent-up rage. Do you want to explain why you never told me I was a shadow hunter? Or that my father was still alive? Oh, and how about that bit where you paid Magnus to steal my memories? I was trying to protect you. Well, you did a terrible job. Clary's voice rose. What did you expect to happen to me after you disappeared? If it hadn't been for Jace and the others, I'd be dead. You never showed me how to protect myself. You never told me how dangerous things really were. What did you think? That if I couldn't see the bad things, that meant they couldn't see me? Her eyes burned. You knew Valentine wasn't dead. You told Luke you thought he was still alive. That's why I had to hide you, Jocelyn said. I couldn't risk letting Valentine know where you were. I couldn't let him touch you. Because he turned your first child into a monster, said Clary. And you didn't want him to do the same to me. Shocked, speechless, Jocelyn could only stare at her. Yes, she said finally. Yes, but that's not all it was, Clary. You stole my memories, Clary said. You took them away from me. You took away who I was. That's not who you are, Jocelyn cried. I never wanted it to be who you were. It doesn't matter what you wanted, Clary shouted. It is who I am. You took all that away from me, and it didn't belong to you. Jocelyn was ashen. Tears rose up in Clary's eyes. She couldn't bear seeing her mother like this, seeing her so hurt. And yet she was the one doing the hurting. And she knew that if she opened her mouth again, more terrible words would come out, more hateful, angry things. She clapped her hand over her mouth and darted for the hallway, pushing past her mother, past Simon's outstretched hand. All she wanted was to get away. Blindly pushing at the front door, she half fell out into the street. Behind her, someone called her name, but she didn't turn around. She was already running. Jace was somewhat surprised to discover that Sebastian had left the Verloc horse in the stables rather than galloping away on it the night he fled. Perhaps he had been afraid that Wayfarer might in some manner be tracked. It gave Jace a certain satisfaction to saddle the stallion up and ride him out of the city. True, if Sebastian had really wanted Wayfarer, he wouldn't have left him behind, and besides, the horse hadn't really been Sebastian's to begin with. But the fact was, Jace liked horses. He'd been 10 the last time he'd ridden one, but the memories, he was pleased to note, came back fast. It had taken him and Clary 6 hours to walk from the Wayland Manor to Alicante. It took about 2 hours to get back, riding at a near gallop. By the time they drew up on the ridge overlooking the house and gardens, both he and the horse were covered in a light sheen of sweat. The misdirection wards that had hidden the manor had been destroyed along with the manor's foundation. What was left of the once elegant building was a heap of smoldering stone. The gardens, singed at the edges now, still brought back memories of the time he'd lived there as a child. There were the rose bushes, denuded of their blossoms now and threaded with green weeds, the stone benches that sat by empty pools, and the hollow in the ground where he'd lain with Clary the night the manor collapsed. He could see the blue glint of the nearby lake through the trees. A surge of bitterness caught him. He jammed his hand into his pocket and drew out first a stele. He'd borrowed it from Alec's room before he'd left, as a replacement for the one Clary had lost, since Alec could always get another. And then the thread he'd taken from the sleeve of Clary's coat.
It lay in his palm, stained red-brown at one end. He closed his fist around it, tightly enough to make the bones jut out under his skin, and with his stele traced a rune on the back of his hand. The faint sting was more familiar than painful. He watched the rune sink into his skin like a stone sinking through water and closed his eyes. Instead of the backs of his eyelids, he saw a valley. He was standing on a ridge looking down over it, and as if he were gazing at a map that pinpointed his location, he knew exactly where he was. He remembered how the Inquisitor had known exactly where Valentine's boat was in the middle of the East River and realized this is how she did it. Every detail was clear. Every blade of grass, the scatter of browning leaves at his feet, but there was no sound. The scene was eerily silent. The valley was a horseshoe with one end narrower than the other. A bright silver rill of water, a creek or stream, ran through the center of it and disappeared among rocks at the narrow end. Beside the stream sat a gray stone house, white smoke puffing from the square chimney. It was an oddly pastoral scene, tranquil under the blue gaze of the sky. As he watched, a slender figure swung into view. Sebastian. Now that he was no longer bothering to pretend, his arrogance was plain in the way he walked, in the jut of his shoulders, the faint smirk on his face. Sebastian knelt down by the side of the stream and plunged his hands in, splashing water up over his face and hair. Jace opened his eyes. Beneath him, Wayfarer was contentedly cropping grass. Jace shoved the stele and thread back into his pocket, and with a single last glance at the ruins of the house he'd grown up in, he gathered up the reins and dug his heels into the horse's sides. Clary lay in the grass near the edge of Guard Hill and stared morosely down at Alicante. The view from here was pretty spectacular, she had to admit. She could look out over the rooftops of the city with their elegant carvings and rune-marked weather vanes, past the spires of the Hall of Accords, out toward something that gleamed in the far distance like the edge of a silver coin. Lake Lynn? The black ruins of the guard hulked behind her, and the demon tower shone like crystal. Clary almost thought she could see the wards shimmering like an invisible net woven around the borders of the city. She looked down at her hands. She'd torn up several fistfuls of grass in the last spasms of her anger, and her fingers were sticky with dirt and blood where she'd ripped a nail half off. Once the fury had passed, a feeling of utter emptiness had replaced it. She hadn't realized how angry she'd been with her mother, not until she'd stepped through the door and Clary had set her panic about Jocelyn's life aside and realized what lay under it. Now that she was calmer, she wondered if a part of her had wanted to punish her mother for what had happened to Jace. If he hadn't been lied to, if they both hadn't been, then perhaps the shock of finding out what Valentine had done to him when he was only a baby wouldn't have driven him to a gesture Clary couldn't help feeling was close to suicide. "Mind if I join you?" She jumped in surprise and rolled onto her side to look up. Simon stood over her, his hands in his pockets. Someone, Isabel probably, had given him a dark jacket of the tough black stuff shadow hunters used for their gear. A vampire in gear, Clary thought, wondering if it was a first. "You snuck up on me," she said. "I guess I'm not much of a shadow hunter, huh?" Simon shrugged. "Well, in your defense, I do move with a silent, panther-like grace." Despite herself, Clary smiled. She sat up, brushing dirt off her hands. "Go ahead and join me. This mope fest is open to all." Sitting beside her, Simon looked out over the city and whistled. "Nice view." "It is." Clary looked at him sidelong. "How did you find me?"
"Well, it took me a few hours." He smiled a little crookedly. "Then I remembered how when we used to fight back in first grade, you'd go and sulk on my roof and my mom would have to get you down."
"So..."
"I know you," he said. "When you get upset, you head for high ground."
He held something out to her, her green coat neatly folded. She took it and shrugged it on. The poor thing was already showing distinct signs of wear. There was even a small hole in the elbow big enough to wiggle a finger through. "Thanks, Simon." She laced her hands around her knees and stared out at the city. The sun was low in the sky, and the towers had begun to glow a faint reddish pink. "Did my mom send you up here to get me?" Simon shook his head.
"Luke, actually. And he just asked me to tell you that you might want to head back before sunset. Some pretty important stuff is happening."
What kind of stuff?
Luke gave the Clave until sunset to decide whether they'd agree to give the Downworlders seats on the council. The Downworlders are all coming to the North Gate at twilight. If the Clave agrees, they can come into Alicante. If not...
They get sent away, Clary finished, and the Clave gives itself up to Valentine.
Yeah.
They'll agree, said Clary. They have to. She hugged her knees. They'd never pick Valentine. No one would.
Glad to see your idealism hasn't been damaged, said Simon.
And though his voice was light, Clary heard another voice through it. Jace's, saying he wasn't an idealist, and she shivered, despite the coat she was wearing. Simon, she said, I have a stupid question.
What is it?
Did you sleep with Isabel? Simon made a choking sound. Clary swiveled slowly around to look at him. Are you okay? She asked.
I think so, he said, recovering his poise with apparent effort. Are you serious?
Well, you were gone all night.
Simon was silent for a long moment. Finally, he said, I'm not sure it's your business, but no.
Well, said Clary, after a judicious pause, I guess you wouldn't have taken advantage of her when she's so grief-stricken and all.
Simon snorted. If you ever meet the man who can take advantage of Isabel, you'll have to let me know. I'd like to shake his hand, or run away from him very fast. I'm not sure which.
So you're not dating Isabel?
Clary, Simon said, why are you asking me about Isabel? Don't you want to talk about your mom or about Jace? Izzy told me that he left. I know how you must be feeling.
No, Clary said. No, I don't think you do.
You're not the only person who's ever felt abandoned.
There was an edge of impatience to Simon's voice.
I guess I just thought, I mean, I've never seen you so angry, and at your mom. I thought you missed her.
Of course I missed her, Clary said, realizing even as she said it how the scene in the kitchen must have looked, especially to her mother. She pushed the thought away. It's just that I've been so focused on rescuing her, saving her from Valentine, then figuring out a way to cure her, that I never even stopped to think about how angry I was that she lied to me all these years. That she kept all of this from me, kept the truth from me, never let me know who I really was.
But that's not what you said when she walked into the room, said Simon quietly. You said, why didn't you ever tell me I had a brother?
I know. Clary yanked a blade of grass out of the dirt, worrying it between her fingers. I guess I can't help thinking that if I'd known the truth, I wouldn't have met Jace the way I did. I wouldn't have fallen in love with him.
Simon was silent for a moment. I don't think I've ever heard you say that before.
That I love him? She laughed, but it sounded dreary even to her ears. Seems useless to pretend like I don't, at this point. Maybe it doesn't matter. I probably won't ever see him again anyway.
He'll come back.
Maybe.
He'll come back, Simon said again. For you.
I don't know. Clary shook her head. It was getting colder as the sun dipped to touch the edge of the horizon. She narrowed her eyes, leaning forward, staring. Simon, look. He followed her gaze. Beyond the wards, at the north gate of the city, hundreds of dark figures were gathering, some huddled together, some standing apart. The Downworlders Luke had called to the city's aid, waiting patiently for word from the Clave to let them in. A shiver sizzled down Clary's spine. She was poised not just on the crest of this hill, looking down over a steep drop to the city below, but at the edge of a crisis, an event that would change the workings of the whole shadow-hunting world.
They're here, Simon said, half to himself. I wonder if that means the Clave's decided.
I hope so. The grass blade Clary had been worrying at was a mangled green mess. She tossed it aside and yanked up another one. I don't know what I'll do if they decide to give in to Valentine. Maybe I can create a portal that'll take us all away to somewhere Valentine will never find us. A deserted island or something.
Okay, I have a stupid question myself, Simon said. You can create new runes, right? Why can't you just create one to destroy every demon in the world, or kill Valentine?
It doesn't work like that, Clary said. I can only create runes I can visualize. The whole image has to come into my head like a picture. When I try to visualize kill Valentine or rule the world or something, I don't get any images, just white noise.
But where do the images of the runes come from, do you think?
I don't know, Clary said. All the runes the Shadow Hunters know come from the Grey Book. That's why they can only be put on Nephilim. That's what they're for. But there are other, older runes. Magnus told me that. Like the Mark of Cain. It was a protection mark, but not one from the Grey Book. So when I think of these runes, like the Fearless Rune, I don't know if it's something I'm inventing or something I'm remembering. Runes older than Shadow Hunters. Runes as old as angels themselves. She thought of the rune Ethereal had showed her, the one as simple as a knot. Had it come from her own mind or the angels? Or was it just something that had always existed, like the sea or the sky? The thought made her shiver.
Are you cold? Simon asked.
Yes, aren't you?
I don't get cold anymore.
He put an arm around her, his hand rubbing her back in slow circles. He chuckled ruefully.
I guess this probably doesn't help much, what with me having no body heat and all.
No, Clary said. I mean, yes, it does help. Stay like that. She glanced up at him. He was staring down at the north gate, around which the dark figures of Downworlders still crowded, almost motionless. The red light of the demon towers reflected in his eyes. He looked like someone in a photograph taken with a flash. She could see faint blue veins spidering just under the surface of his skin where it was thinnest, at his temples, at the base of his collarbone. She knew enough about vampires to know that this meant it had been a while since he'd fed.
Are you hungry?
Now he did glance down at her.
Afraid I'm going to bite you?
You know you're welcome to my blood whenever you want it. A shiver, not from cold, passed over him, and he pulled her more tightly against his side.
I'd never do that, he said,
and then more lightly.
Besides, I've already drunk Jace's blood. I've had enough of feeding off my friends.
Clary thought of the silver scar on the side of Jace's throat. Slowly, her mind still full of the image of Jace, she said, Do you think that's why...
Why what?
Why sunlight doesn't hurt you? I mean, it did hurt you before that, didn't it? Before that night on the boat? He nodded reluctantly. So what else changed? Or is it just that you drank his blood?
You mean because he's Nephilim? No. No, it's something else. You and Jace, you're not quite normal, are you? I mean, not normal Shadow Hunters. There's something special about you both. Like the Seelie Queen said, you were experiments.
He smiled at her startled look.
I'm not stupid. I can put these things together. You with your rune powers and Jace, well, no one could be that annoying without some kind of supernatural assistance.
Do you really dislike him that much?
I don't dislike Jace, Simon protested. I mean, I hated him at first, sure. He seemed so arrogant and sure of himself, and you acted like he hung the moon.
I did not.
Let me finish, Clary.
There was a breathless undercurrent in Simon's voice, if someone who never breathed could be said to be breathless. He sounded as if he were racing toward something.
I could tell how much you liked him, and I thought he was using you, that you were just some stupid mundane girl he could impress with his Shadow Hunter tricks. First I told myself that you'd never fall for it, and then that, even if you did, he'd get tired of you eventually and you'd come back to me. I'm not proud of that, but when you're desperate, you'll believe anything, I guess. And then when he turned out to be your brother, it seemed like a last-minute reprieve, and I was glad. I was even glad to see how much he seemed to be suffering. Until that night in the Seelie Court when you kissed him, I could see...
See what? Clary said, unable to bear the pause.
The way he looked at you. I got it then. He was never using you. He loved you, and it was killing him.
Is that why you went to the Dumour? Clary whispered.
It was something she'd always wanted to know, but had never been able to bring herself to ask. Because of you and Jace? Not in any real way, no. Ever since that night in the hotel, I'd been wanting to go back. I dreamed about it. And I'd wake up out of bed getting dressed or already on the street, and I knew I wanted to go back to the hotel. It was always worse at night, and worse the closer I got to the hotel. It didn't even occur to me that it was something supernatural. I thought it was post-traumatic stress or something. That night, I was so exhausted and angry, and we were so close to the hotel, and it was night. I barely even remember what happened. I just remembered walking away from the park and then nothing.
But if you hadn't been angry at me, if we hadn't upset you...
It's not like you had a choice,
Simon said. And it's not like I didn't know. You can only push the truth down for so long and then it bubbles back up. The mistake I made was not telling you what was going on with me, not telling you about the dreams. But I don't regret dating you. I'm glad we tried. And I love you for trying, even if it was never going to work.
I wanted it to work so much, Clary said softly. I never wanted to hurt you.
I wouldn't change it, Simon said. I wouldn't give up loving you. Not for anything. You know what Raphael told me? That I didn't know how to be a good vampire. That vampires accept that they're dead. But as long as I remember what it was like to love you, I'll always feel like I'm alive.
Simon.
Look. He cut her off with a gesture, his dark eyes widening. Down there. The sun was a red sliver on the horizon. As she looked, it flickered and vanished, disappearing past the dark rim of the world. The demon towers of Alicante blazed into sudden incandescent life. In their light, Clary could see the dark crowd swarming restlessly around the north gate.
What's going on? She whispered. The sun's set. Why aren't the gates opening?
Simon was motionless. The Clave, he said. They must have said no to Luke.
But they can't have.
Clary's voice rose sharply.
That would mean...
They're going to give themselves up to Valentine.
They can't, Clary cried again.
But even as she stared, she saw the groups of dark figures surrounding the wards turn and move away from the city, streaming like ants out of a destroyed anthill. Simon's face was waxy in the fading light. I guess, he said, they really hate us that much. They'd really rather choose Valentine.
It's not hate, Clary said. It's that they're afraid. Even Valentine was afraid.
She said it without thinking, and realized as she said it that it was true.
Afraid and jealous.
Simon flicked a glance toward her in surprise. Jealous? But Clary was back in the dream Ethereal had showed her, Valentine's voice echoing in her ears. I wanted to ask him why. Why he created us, his race of shadow hunters, yet did not give us the powers downworlders have. The speed of the wolves, the immortality of the fair folk, the magic of warlocks, even the endurance of vampires. He left us naked before the hosts of hell but for these painted lines on our skin. Why should their powers be greater than ours? Why can't we share in what they have? Her lips parted as she stared unseen down at the city below. She was vaguely aware that Simon was saying her name, but her mind was racing. The angel could have showed her anything, she thought. But he'd chosen to show her these scenes, these memories, for a reason. She thought of Valentine crying. That we should be bound to downworlders, tied to those creatures. And the rune, the one she had dreamed of, the rune is simple as a knot. Why can't we share in what they have? Binding, she said out loud. It's a binding rune. It joins like and unlike. What? Simon stared up at her in confusion.
She scrambled to her feet, brushing off the dirt. I have to get down there. Where are they?
Where are who? Clary?
The Clave. Where are they meeting? Where's Luke?
Simon rose to his feet. The Accords Hall. Clary. But she was already racing toward the winding path that led to the city. Swearing under his breath, Simon followed. They say all roads lead to the hall. Sebastian's words pounded over and over in Clary's head, and she sprinted down the narrow streets of Alicante. She hoped it was true, because otherwise she was definitely going to get lost. The streets twisted at odd angles, not like the lovely, straight, gridded streets of Manhattan. In Manhattan, you always knew where you were. Everything was clearly numbered and laid out. This was a labyrinth. She darted through a tiny courtyard and down one of the narrow canal paths, knowing that if she followed the water, she'd eventually come out in Angel Square. Somewhat to her surprise, the path took her by Amatus's house, and then she was racing, panting, down a wider, curving, familiar street. It opened out onto the square, the Accords Hall rising up wide and white before her, the angel statue shining at the square's center. Standing beside the statue was Simon, his arms crossed, regarding her darkly. You could have waited, he said.
She leaned forward, her hands on her knees, catching her breath. You can't really say that, since you got here before me anyway.
Vampire speed, Simon said with some satisfaction. When we get home,
I ought to go out for track.
That would be cheating.
With a last deep breath, Clary straightened up and pushed her sweaty hair out of her eyes.
Come on, we're going in.
The hall was full of shadow hunters. More shadow hunters than Clary had ever seen in one place before, even on the night of Valentine's attack. Their voices rose in a roar like a crashing avalanche. Most of them had gathered into contentious shouting groups. The dais was deserted, the map of Idris hanging forlornly behind it. She looked around for Luke. It took her a moment to find him, leaning against a pillar with his eyes half closed. He looked awful, half dead, his shoulders slumped. Amethyst stood behind him, patting his shoulder worriedly. Clary looked around, but Jocelyn was nowhere to be seen in the crowd. For just a moment she hesitated. Then she thought of Jace going after Valentine, doing it alone, knowing that he might well get himself killed. He knew he was a part of this, a part of all of it, and she was too. She always had been, even when she hadn't known it. Adrenaline was still coursing through her in spikes, sharpening her perception, making everything seem clear. Almost too clear. She squeezed Simon's hand. "Wish me luck," she said. And then her feet were carrying her toward the dais steps. Almost without her volition, and then she was standing on the dais and turning to face the crowd. She wasn't sure what she'd expected. Gasps of surprise? A sea of hushed, expectant faces? They barely noticed her. Only Luke looked up, as if he sensed her there, and froze with a look of astonishment on his face. And there was someone coming toward her through the crowd. A tall man with bones as prominent as the prow of a sailing ship. Consul Malachi. He was gesturing at her to get down from the dais, shaking his head and shouting something she couldn't hear. More shadow hunters were turning toward her now as he made his way through the throng. Clary had what she wanted now, all eyes riveted on her. She heard the whispers running through the crowd.
That's her, Valentine's daughter.
You're right, she said, casting her voice as far and as loudly as she could. I am Valentine's daughter. I never even knew he was my father until a few weeks ago. I never even knew he existed until a few weeks ago. I know a lot of you are going to believe that's not true, and that's fine. Believe what you want. Just as long as you also believe I know things about Valentine you don't know. Things that could help you win this battle against him. If only you let me tell you what they are.
Ridiculous. Malachi stood at the foot of the dais steps. This is ridiculous. You're just a little girl. She's Jocelyn Fairchild's daughter.
It was Patrick Penhallow. Having pushed his way to the front of the crowd, he held up a hand.
Let the girl say her piece, Malachi.
The crowd was buzzing. You, Clary said to the consul, you and the Inquisitor threw my friend Simon into prison.
Malachi sneered. Your friend the vampire?
He told me you asked him what happened to Valentine's ship that night on the East River. You thought Valentine must have done something, some kind of black magic. Well, he didn't. If you want to know what destroyed that ship, the answer is me. I did it. Malachi's disbelieving laugh was echoed by several others in the crowd. Luke was looking at her, shaking his head, but Clary plowed on. I did it with a rune, she said. It was a rune so strong it made the ship come apart in pieces. I can create new runes, not just the ones in the Grey Book. Runes no one's ever seen before. Powerful ones.
That's enough, Malachi roared. This is ridiculous. No one can create new runes. It's a complete impossibility. He turned to the crowd. Like her father, this girl is nothing but a liar. She's not lying.
The voice came from the back of the crowd. It was clear, strong, and purposeful. The crowd turned. And Clary saw who had spoken. It was Alec. He stood with Isabel on one side of him and Magnus on the other. Simon was with them, and so was Mayris Lightwood. They formed a small, determined-looking knot by the front doors.
I've seen her create a rune. She even used it on me. It worked. You're lying, the consul said.
But doubt had crept into his eyes.
To protect your friend. Really, Malachi, Mayris said crisply. Why would my son lie about something like this, when the truth can so easily be discovered? Give the girl a stele and let her create a rune.
A murmur of assent ran around the hall. Patrick Penhallow stepped forward and held a stele up to Clary. She took it gratefully and turned back to the crowd.
Her mouth went dry. Her adrenaline was still up, but it wasn't enough to completely drown her stage fright. What was she supposed to do? What kind of rune could she create that would convince this crowd she was telling the truth? What would show them the truth? She looked out then through the crowd and saw Simon with the Lightwoods, looking at her across the empty space that separated them. It was the same way that Jace had looked at her at the manor. It was the one thread that bound these two boys that she loved so much. She thought their one commonality. They both believed in her, even when she didn't believe in herself. Looking at Simon and thinking of Jace, she brought the stele down and drew its stinging point against the inside of her wrist where her pulse beat. She didn't look down as she was doing it, but drew blindly, trusting herself in the stele to create the rune she needed. She drew it faintly, lightly. She would need it only for a moment, but without a second's hesitation. And when she was done, she raised her head and opened her eyes. The first thing she saw was Malachi. His face had gone white, and he was backing away from her with a look of horror. He said something, a word in a language she didn't recognize, and then behind him she saw Luke, staring at her, his mouth slightly open.
"Jocelyn?" Luke said.
She shook her head at him just slightly and looked out at the crowd. It was a blur of faces fading in and out as she stared. Some were smiling, some were glancing around the crowd in surprise, some turning to the person who stood next to them. A few wore expressions of horror or amazement, hands clamped over their mouths. She saw Alec glance quickly at Magnus, and then at her in disbelief, and Simon looking on in puzzlement. And then Amatis came forward, shoving her way past Patrick Penhallow's bulk, and ran up to the edge of the dais.
"Stephen," she said, looking up at Clary with a sort of dazzled amazement. "Stephen!"
"Oh," Clary said. "Oh, Amatis, no."
And then she felt the rune magic slip from her, as if she'd shed a thin, invisible garment. Amatis's eager face dropped, and she backed away from the dais, her expression half crestfallen and half amazed. Clary looked out across the crowd. They were utterly silent. Every face turned to her.
"I know what you all just saw," she said. "And I know that you know that that kind of magic is beyond any glamour or illusion. And I did that with one rune. A single rune. A rune that I created. There are reasons why I have this ability, and I know you might not like them or even believe them, but it doesn't matter. What matters is that I can help you win this battle against Valentine if you'll let me."
"There will be no battle against Valentine," Malachi said.
He didn't meet her eyes as he spoke.
"The Clave has decided. We will agree to Valentine's terms and lay down our arms tomorrow morning."
"You can't do that," she said, a tinge of desperation entering her voice. "You think everything will be all right if you just give up? You think Valentine will let you keep on living like you have already? You think he'll confine his killing to demons and downworlders?" She swept her gaze across the room. "Most of you haven't seen Valentine in 15 years. Maybe you've forgotten what he's really like. But I know. I've heard him talk about his plans. You think you can still live your lives under Valentine's rule, but you won't be able to. He'll control you completely. Because he'll always be able to threaten to destroy you with the mortal instruments. He'll start with downworlders, of course. But then he'll go to the Clave. He'll kill them first because he thinks they're weak and corrupt. Then he'll start in on anyone who has a downworlder anywhere in their family. Maybe a werewolf brother." Her eyes swept over Amatis. "Or a rebellious teenage daughter who dates the occasional fairy knight." Her eyes went to the Lightwoods. "Or anyone who's ever so much as befriended a downworlder. And then he'll go after anyone who's ever employed the services of a warlock. How many of you would that be?"
"This is nonsense," Malachi said crisply. "Valentine is not interested in destroying Nephilim."
"But he doesn't think anyone who associates with downworlders is worthy of being called Nephilim," Clary insisted.
"Look, your war isn't against Valentine. It's against demons. Keeping demons from this world is your mandate, a mandate from heaven. And a mandate from heaven isn't something you can just ignore. Downworlders hate demons, too. They destroy them, too. If Valentine has his way, he'll spend so much of his time trying to murder every downworlder and every shadow hunter who's ever associated with them that he'll forget all about the demons. And so will you, because you'll be so busy being afraid of Valentine. And they'll overrun the world, and that will be that.
I see where this is going, Malachi said through gritted teeth. We will not fight beside downworlders in the service of a battle we can't possibly win.
But you can win, Clary said. You can. Her throat was dry, her head aching, and the faces in the crowd before her seemed to meld into a featureless blur, punctuated here and there by soft white explosions of light. But you can't stop now. You have to keep going. You have to try.
My father hates downworlders because he's jealous of them, she went on, her words tripping over one another. Jealous and afraid of all the things they can do that he can't. He hates that in some ways they're more powerful than Nephilim, and I'd bet he's not alone in that. It's easy to be afraid of what you don't share.
She took a breath. But what if you could share it?
What if I could make a rune that could bind each of you, each Shadow Hunter, to a downworlder who is fighting by your side? And you could share your powers. You could be as fast healing as a vampire, as tough as a werewolf, or as swift as a fairy knight. And they, in turn, could share your training, your fighting skills. You could be an unbeatable force. If you'll let me mark you, and if you'll fight with the downworlders. Because if you don't fight beside them, the runes won't work.
She paused. Please, she said, but the word came almost inaudibly out of her dry throat. Please let me mark you.
Her words fell into a ringing silence. The world moved in a shifting blur, and she realized that she delivered the last half of her speech staring up at the ceiling of the hall, and that the soft white explosions she'd seen had been the stars coming out in the night sky, one by one. The silence went on and on as her hands at her sides curled themselves slowly into fists. And then slowly, very slowly, she lowered her gaze and met the eyes of the crowd staring back at her. Chapter 17 The Shadow Hunter's Tale. Clary sat on the top steps of the Accords Hall looking out over Angel Square. The moon had come up earlier and was just visible over the roofs of the houses. The demon towers reflected back its light, silver-white. The darkness hid the scars and bruises of the city well. It looked peaceful under the night sky. If one didn't look up at Guard Hill and the ruined outline of the citadel. Guards patrolled the square below, appearing and disappearing as they moved in and out of the illumination of the witchlight lamps. They studiously ignored Clary's presence. A few steps below her, Simon was pacing back and forth, his footsteps utterly soundless. He had his hands in his pockets, and when he turned at the end of the stairs to walk back toward her, the moonlight glossed off his pale skin as if it were a reflective surface.
"Quit pacing," she told him. "You're just making me more nervous."
"Sorry."
"I feel like we've been out here forever."
Clary strained her ears, but she couldn't hear more than the dull murmur of many voices coming through the closed double doors of the hall.
"Can you hear what they're saying inside?"
Simon half-closed his eyes. He appeared to be concentrating hard. "A little," he said after a pause.
"I wish I were in there," Clary said, kicking her heels irritably against the steps.
Luke had asked her to wait outside the doors while the Clave deliberated. He'd wanted to send Amatis out with her, but Simon had insisted on coming instead, saying it would be better to have Amatis inside, supporting Clary.
"I wish I were part of the meeting."
"No," Simon said, "you don't." She knew why Luke had asked her to wait outside. She could imagine what they were saying about her in there. Liar, freak, fool, crazy, stupid, monster, Valentine's daughter. Perhaps she was better off outside the hall, but the tension of anticipating the Clave's decision was almost painful. "Maybe I can climb one of those," Simon said, eyeing the fat white pillars that held up the slanted roof of the hall. Runes were carved on them in overlapping patterns, but otherwise there were no visible handholds. "Work off steam that way."
"Oh, come on," Clary said. "You're a vampire, not Spider-Man."
Simon's only response was to jog lightly up the steps to the base of a pillar. He eyed it thoughtfully for a moment before putting his hands to it and starting to climb. Clary watched him, open-mouthed, as his fingertips and feet found impossible holds on the ridged stone.
You are Spider-Man, she exclaimed.
Simon glanced down from his perch halfway up the pillar.
That makes you Mary Jane. She has red hair, he said.
He glanced out across the city, frowning.
I was hoping I could see the North Gate from here, but I'm not high enough.
Clary knew why he wanted to see the gate. Messengers had been dispatched there to ask the Downworlders to wait while the Clave deliberated, and Clary could only hope they were willing to do it. And if they were, what was it like out there? Clary pictured the crowd waiting, milling, wondering. The double doors of the hall cracked open. A slim figure slipped through the gap, closed the door, and turned to face Clary. She was in shadow, and it was only when she moved forward, closer to the witchlight that illuminated the steps, that Clary saw the bright blaze of her red hair and recognized her mother. Jocelyn looked up, her expression bemused.
Well, hello, Simon. Glad to see you're adjusting.
Simon let go of the pillar and dropped, landing lightly at its base. He looked mildly abashed.
Hey, Mrs. Frey.
I don't know if there's any point in calling me that now, said Clary's mother.
Maybe you should just call me Jocelyn. She hesitated.
You know, strange as this situation is, it's good to see you here with Clary. I can't remember the last time you two were apart.
Simon looked acutely embarrassed. It's good to see you, too.
Thank you, Simon. Jocelyn glanced at her daughter. Now, Clary, would it be all right for us to talk for a moment, alone? Clary sat motionless for a long moment, staring at her mother. It was hard not to feel like she was staring at a stranger. Her throat felt tight, almost too tight to speak. She glanced toward Simon, who was clearly waiting for a signal from her to tell him whether to stay or go. She sighed.
Okay.
Simon gave Clary an encouraging thumbs up before vanishing back into the hall. Clary turned away and stared fixedly down into the square, watching the guards do their rounds, as Jocelyn came and sat down next to her. Part of Clary wanted to lean sideways and put her head on her mother's shoulder. She could even close her eyes, pretend everything was all right. The other part of her knew that it wouldn't make a difference. She couldn't keep her eyes closed forever. Clary? Jocelyn said at last, very softly. I am so sorry. Clary stared down at her hands. She was, she realized, still holding Patrick Penhallow's stele. She hoped he didn't think she'd meant to steal it.
I never thought I'd see this place again, Jocelyn went on.
Clary stole a sideways glance at her mother and saw that she was looking out over the city, at the demon towers casting their pale whitish light over the skyline. I dreamed about it sometimes. I even wanted to paint it, to paint my memories of it, but I couldn't do that. I thought if you ever saw the paintings, you might ask questions, might wonder how those images had ever come into my head. I was so frightened you'd find out where I was really from, who I really was. And now I have. And now you have. Jocelyn sounded wistful. And you have every reason to hate me.
I don't hate you, Mom, Clary said. I just...
Don't trust me, said Jocelyn. I can't blame you.
I should have told you the truth. She touched Clary's shoulder lightly and seemed encouraged when Clary didn't move away.
I can tell you I did it to protect you, but I know how that must sound. I was there just now in the hall watching you.
You were there?
Clary was startled.
I didn't see you.
I was in the very back of the hall. Luke had told me not to come to the meeting, that my presence would just upset everyone and throw everything off, and he was probably right. But I so badly wanted to be there. I slipped in after the meeting started and hid in the shadows. But I was there, and I just wanted to tell you.
That I made a fool out of myself? Clary said bitterly. I already know that.
No. I wanted to tell you that I was proud of you. Clary slewed around to look at her mother.
You were?
Jocelyn nodded. Of course I was. The way you stood up in front of the Clave like that? The way you showed them what you could do? You made them look at you and see the person they loved most in the world, didn't you?
Yeah, Clary said. How did you know?
Because I heard them all calling out different names, Jocelyn said softly. But I still saw you.
Oh.
Clary looked down at her feet.
Well, I'm still not sure they believe me about the runes. I mean, I hope so, but...
Can I see it? Jocelyn asked.
See what?
The rune. The one that you created to bind Shadowhunters and Downworlders. She hesitated. If you can't show me...
No, it's all right.
With the stele, Clary traced the lines of the rune the angel had showed her across the marble of the Accord's hall step, and they blazed up in hot gold lines as she drew. It was a strong rune, a map of curving lines overlapping a matrix of straight ones, simple and complex at the same time. Clary knew now why it had seemed somehow unfinished to her when she had visualized it before. It needed a matching rune to make it work, a twin, a partner. Alliance, she said, drawing the stele back. That's what I'm calling it. Jocelyn watched silently as the rune flared and faded, leaving faint black lines on the stone. When I was a young woman, she said finally, I fought so hard to bind Downworlders and Shadowhunters together, to protect the Accords. I thought I was chasing a sort of dream, something most Shadowhunters could hardly imagine. And now you've made it concrete and literal and real. She blinked hard. I realized something watching you there in the hall. You know, all these years I've tried to protect you by hiding you away. It's why I hated you going to Pandemonium. I knew it was a place where Downworlders and Mundanes mingled, and that meant there would be Shadowhunters there. I imagined it was something in your blood that drew you to the place. Something that recognized the Shadow World even without your sight. I thought you would be safe if only I could keep that world hidden from you. I never thought about trying to protect you by helping you to be strong and to fight. She sounded sad. But somehow, you got to be strong anyway. Strong enough for me to tell you the truth, if you still want to hear it. I don't know. Clary thought of the images the angel had showed her, how terrible they had been. I know I was angry with you for lying, but I'm not sure I want to find out any more horrible things. I talked to Luke. He thought you should know what I have to tell you. The whole story, all of it. Things I've never told anyone, never told him even. I can't promise you that the whole truth is pleasant, but it is the truth. The law is hard, but it is the law. She owed it to Jace to find out the truth as much as she owed it to herself. Clary tightened her grip on the stele in her hand, her knuckles whitening. I want to know everything. Everything. Jocelyn took a deep breath. I don't even know where to start.
How about starting with how you could marry Valentine? How you could have married a man like that, made him my father? He's a monster.
No. He's a man. He's not a good man. But if you want to know why I married him, it was because I loved him.
You can't have, Clary said. Nobody could.
I was your age when I fell in love with him, Jocelyn said. I thought he was perfect. Brilliant, clever, wonderful, funny, charming. I know you're looking at me as if I've lost my mind. You only know Valentine the way he is now. You can't imagine what he was like then. When we were at school together, everyone loved him. He seemed to give off light, in a way like there was some special and brilliantly illuminated part of the universe that only he had access to. And if we were lucky, he might share it with us, even just a little. Every girl loved him, and I thought I didn't have a chance. There was nothing special about me. I wasn't even that popular. Luke was one of my closest friends, and I spent most of my time with him. But still, somehow... Valentine chose me. Gross, Clary wanted to say, but she held back. Maybe it was the wistfulness in her mother's voice, mixed with regret. Maybe it was what she had said about Valentine giving off light. Clary had thought the same thing about Jace before, and then felt stupid for thinking it. But maybe everyone in love felt that way.
Okay, she said, I get it. But you were 16 then. That doesn't mean you had to marry him later.
I was 18 when we got married. He was 19, Jocelyn said in a matter-of-fact tone.
Oh my God, Clary said in horror. You'd kill me if I wanted to get married when I was 18.
I would, Jocelyn agreed.
but Shadowhunters tend to get married earlier than mundanes. Their, our, lifespans are shorter. A lot of us die violent deaths. We tend to do everything earlier because of it. Even so, I was young to get married. Still, my family was happy for me. Even Luke was happy for me. Everyone thought Valentine was a wonderful boy. And he was, you know, just a boy then. The only person who ever told me I shouldn't marry him was Madeline. We'd been friends in school, but when I told her I was engaged, she said that Valentine was selfish and hateful, that his charm masked a terrible amorality. I told myself she was jealous. Was she? No, said Jocelyn. She was telling the truth. I just didn't want to hear it. She glanced down at her hands. But you were sorry, Clary said. After you married him? You were sorry you did it, right?
Clary, Jocelyn said. She sounded tired. We were happy. At least for the first few years. We went to live in my parents' manor house where I grew up. Valentine didn't want to be in the city, and he wanted the rest of the circle to avoid Alicante and the prying eyes of the Clave as well. The Waylands lived in the manor just a mile or two from ours, and there were others close by, the Lightwoods, the Penhollows. It was like being at the center of the world, with all this activity swirling around us, all this passion. And through it all, I was by Valentine's side. He never made me feel dismissed or inconsequential. No, I was a key part of the circle. I was one of the few whose opinions he trusted. He told me over and over that without me, he couldn't do any of it. Without me, he'd be nothing.
He did?
Clary couldn't imagine Valentine saying anything like that, anything that made him sound vulnerable. He did, but it wasn't true. Valentine could never have been nothing. He was born to be a leader, to be the center of a revolution. More and more converts came to him. They were drawn by his passion and the brilliance of his ideas. He rarely even spoke of downworlders in those early days. It was all about reforming the Clave, changing laws that were ancient and rigid and wrong. Valentine said there should be more Shadowhunters, more to fight the demons, more institutes, that we should worry less about hiding and more about protecting the world from demonkind, that we should walk tall and proud in the world. It was seductive, his vision. A world full of Shadowhunters, where demons ran scared and mundanes, instead of believing we didn't exist, thanked us for what we did for them. We were young. We thought thanks were important. We didn't know. Jocelyn took a deep breath, as if she were about to dive underwater. Then I got pregnant. Clary felt a cold prickle at the back of her neck, and suddenly, she couldn't have said why. She was no longer sure she wanted the truth from her mother, no longer sure she wanted to hear again how Valentine had made Jace into a monster. Mom? Jocelyn shook her head blindly. You asked me why I never told you that you had a brother. This is why. She took a ragged breath. I was so happy when I found out. And Valentine, he'd always wanted to be a father, he said. To train his son to be a warrior the way his father had trained him. Or your daughter, I'd say. And he'd smile and say a daughter could be a warrior just as well as a boy, and he would be happy with either. I thought everything was perfect. And then Luke was bitten by a werewolf. They'll tell you there's a 1 in 2 chance that a bite will pass on lycanthropy. I think it's more like 3 in 4. I've rarely seen anyone escape the disease, and Luke was no exception. At the next full moon, he changed. He was there on our doorstep in the morning, covered in blood, his clothes torn to rags. I wanted to comfort him, but Valentine shoved me aside. Jocelyn, he said, the baby. As if Luke were about to run at me and tear the baby out of my stomach. It was Luke. But Valentine pushed me away and dragged Luke down the steps and into the woods. When he came back much later, he was alone,